in this parliament this year. And I say that unequivocally. And that's, I think, a tribute to your hard work. Hard work, all of you. And, of course, the committee's application of scrutiny. All right? But, well, here and there, yes, thank you. But, so, we're now on possible framework. I studied this trade report, and I hope some of you did as well. And I think there'd been a little bit of a misunderstanding, and I'm not surprised considering the pressure we're all under. We had indicated that what we wanted was, we're coming to the end of a five-year term. We didn't just start trade now, in the same way the admin prices, the IPAP, and so on and so forth. And regulatory entities. So what we said is, when we first came in 2009, what was the position on trade? What was it? Then we heard there was a framework policy. Where did we go to with that policy? What were the critical issues we said we would have to pursue? What was this new policy? Well, that's not new policy, but fresh interpretation of policy on trade. It was not that trade would lead industry. Remember that, Ms. Irving? It became, for the first time, that strategic trade would underpin industry. Industrialization and the development of our economy and other socio-economic issues, the productive factors, would in fact inform strategic trade, not the other way around. Now that was quite a shift in the thinking, you see. So all of that had to be factored in. The second thing that we began to engage along the way, every party agreed that we've got to do something about exports. We cannot go on like that, building up deficits here, trade deficits. We can't. We have got to insist and ensure that our exports balance out with our imports. And also we've got to question every agreement that we've got on the table. In fact, the only agreement I know that some parties questioned was the Cuban one. But be that as it may. Now, that right then, Honourable James, the Cuban one. And people weren't too concerned about the rum at that stage. So, on this Cuban one that we heard, I remember Honourable Kwabasa, it was the first and only time I've exercised my right as chair, the power, to make a casting vote. Very first and only time. That has to say a lot. But we all agreed on something else. We said we've got to re-examine all our trade agreements. We haven't done all of them, have we, Ms. Irving? But we made a start with the BITs. And we called in the department when we became aware that certain BITs were going west, as it were not being renewed. We didn't cancel them. We simply didn't renew them. Why not? And all of us are aware. And broadly, I think we agreed, but I say broadly. What we have all agreed on, though, absolutely, is that we want a AGOA. For our different reasons, we all think a AGOA is a good thing. And by the way, that's no bilateral. Then we said, like any other sovereign country, we can't put all our trading eggs in one basket. We've got to go east, north, and south. We began to develop the South issue, South-South. But we said, what about the East? We were castigated for that relationship with the East, in particular China, by Europe, whom we subsequently learned had a very strong relationship with China themselves. So, you see, it's often the case of let's knock you, and the harder we knock, the more you'll forget what we're up to. Now, South Africa is no longer naive in its trading relationships. And I think I'm very pleased about that. Now these things, why am I spelling all of this out? Some of you may have done a lot of reading before you came and joined this committee. And that's great. But some of you came into the committee from other committees or outside Parliament and may not have been aware of what we faced when we got here and how we've worked through them and the questions we've asked. I think again we'd all agree, and it's quite a serious statement, the beginning in 2009 when we did our strategic framework as a committee, we had a workshop, didn't we, a two-day whatever, and we actually said, what is the mandate? Remember that? What is the mandate? We said it is trade and industry. Not, you know, well, 40 here, 100% there, whatever. And then somebody reminded us, well, what about the regulatory stuff? And for a long, long time, we almost forgot that regulatory issues came under us. And then we remembered they did, with a bang. Wasn't it under CIPCO, DDG? Remember the CIPCO hit us like a bolt when we suddenly realized how important it was. And isn't that, in one sense, related to the regulatory issues? Yet, of course not, but there is a link there. So we have that whole thing, and we suddenly found that after 2 years, we were not giving sufficient space to trade. Remember that? We picked it up quickly. Oh, what's the trade issue? Then it was forgotten again, and then we remembered again it wasn't one our mandate. And we've been inclined, and this thing, you could say it's a little bit of a criticism of the PC, not the department, the portfolio committee, is that we have not always recognized that we must unpack this. We've done it in little bits and pieces. I mean, Ms. Herving, I asked her to pull out everything. You know, what we've done is reflected in reports. You know, it's there. So we can't ignore that. But we have been faced with many other issues. Sometimes I wonder what gambling's got to do with us, but there it is, all there. And a few other issues that we've got given to us. And, you know, it all comes under us. When we started, we had over 20 or 23 entities, and now it is 17, is it? 14. Okay. That's a lot. 14 entities and the like. I mention this because when we do this, we have got the IPAP issues of productive investment link up. I want you, does everyone have this, to go to number two, South African trade policy, agricultural trade, agro-industry, trade and other goods. There's this recent thing, the services, trade and services, remember. And we've suddenly got to, you know, ensure that we pick up all the bits and pieces around that and pull that in, and it's not here. The new generation issues are now expected to cover everything, including green and whatever. And Honourable Oriani's famous one, nanotechnologies and all of that. Best cover all of those issues and unpack them. And we've done this. Then south-south, north-south, east, we've got Japan as well there. Regional integration, intra-African trade, SADC, etc., etc., the free trade agreement. Now, what one is trying to spell out here is how important it is, if I can find my bag, I never can, that we ensure that we cover all of the issues as we come to this time of our report. And among them, I want members to check the WTO documents because we didn't only go to WIPO, we went to the WTO for 3 days of training. And check out the Doha issues as we face there, what we mean about the multilaterals, the TRIPS, etc., and food security. The World Bank has done some very good reports congratulating South Africa's new trade approach and the industrial policy action plan and the linker. We've got to tackle those. There's a whole issue that we've done on trade with climate change and energy. And without going too much on the issue, we should also have unpack what we got regarding the NAMAs, etc. But I know you've got all that. But this report is bigger than we thought, you see. So initially I had said to Ms. Herling, I want the second draft here today. But there's no purpose in providing a second draft. Well, you can see I've spoken for 15 minutes non-stop. And I've touched on everything, nothing more. So I would like the committee, and of course, it's quite strange how Mr. Hermans has managed to leave at a critical moment, but I certainly want the latest program to indicate to members that we've had to find a rejig the program somewhat. And I want to indicate how we're going to tackle the trade so that you're aware now. So today is Friday the 25th. You can see it was crossed out for consideration of the second draft. The formal consideration of legal metrology was going to be on the 29th, and consideration of the second draft trade will kick in there Tuesday the 29th. I hope you're all there. Now, I am really appealing to members. When you go to your political meetings and rallies, that's fine. Take the political stuff. At home, try and sacrifice a little bit of time over the weekend to just refresh your memories on what we've done. You've got the report. If anyone wants something emailed to them, speak to Mr. Hermans. Do you understand? And Honourable Swanepoel, we do understand your position. I've asked for a package and packs to be made up for you. All right? And yourself, that's right, Honourable Storley, you know, yourself. But I thought Honourable Swanepoel has been totally out of it, if you know what I mean. Nowhere near Parliament, as it were. And then we have the second opportunity, is that we, on that second draft, which Ms. Naidu, wherever she is, I just can't see her, the minister will come to us, Minister Dr. Rob Davies, on the 5th of November, and the 1st of November, a Friday, and brief us, covering, yes, the 9th WTO Ministerial Conference, but also trade issues. We will give you the second draft, so that when the minister is commenting, that is factored in. You follow? And we're able then to get the department's response. I hope we're all on board here. Then we'll actually tackle the two. We'll get Ms. Hurley to put the two together, and then we're going to, you know, then look at it on the 5th. And that's where we'll do this deliberation. On the 5th of November. Trade. Okay? The consideration, I suppose, with poor Miss Herling working through the night, and Mr. Hermans getting some food helicoptered in, then we'll have that consideration. So it'd be particularly important for you to study the 5th. The draft, you know, the draft you get on the 5th, because we've got to consider it the next day. I hope everyone's on board there. Yes, Honourable McIntosh?
Madam Chair, thank you. I can see you're keen for us to do a lot more work on trade. Just two things. I think for Honourable Swanepoel and Honourable Sharpe-Stare, if they read the BRRR, which is in the ATC already, I notice, that gives you a very good overview of what this committee does, I think. On this question of trade, and look, I know this is a possible framework, so it's absolutely nothing definite, but I mean the significance of trade in meeting developmental objectives is a bit like saying the importance of breakfast before you go to school. It's obvious we must have trade. Madam Chair, what I'm not quite clear about is how does this committee actually get a handle on this thing? It's all right if one's got a GOA, because we know about that. There's the EU trade agreement. Mercosur, I'm pleased to see, is mentioned here. And I think that's hugely important for us because of Latin America and Brazil. The whole SADC, I don't know what EPA exactly stands for, I don't know what PTA stands for. These acronyms are quite confusing, although I must say DTI is very good about giving these long lists of the acronyms. But I'm not quite sure why there's this sudden energy from our very energetic chair lady on trade. It's just as though now, in the last few months of this 5-year period, we've got to suddenly attack a project in the form of trade.
I'd hardly call it a project. It's been a project all year. What I am saying, and I want to refresh people's memories, I said perhaps the criticism of the portfolio committee, when you compare the work we've done on IPAP, etc., and the regulatory side of issues, we probably have only done 25% of our time in this area. I may not have mentioned the percentage, but just to illustrate and give you an idea. But I said that every time this has been raised, and we have raised it every 6 months at this point, we all agree. We all agree we must pursue it. There's never been a disagreement. What we are doing is simply consolidating, putting it together. I'm not consolidating it, incidentally. Staff are pulling it out from what we have said, not what we haven't said. And I think I must make that clear. What we haven't said, you will be saying when you see it. So, they are pulling it out. The same way they prepared the BRRR, pulling it out. They're consolidating it for us, and the only thing that at this stage we're doing is saying, what kind of framework, do we want? That's all we're saying as I talk to you now. And I think that must be very clear. It must be very clear. And may I add, I'm hardly the most energetic here. Let's not speak for yourself, Honourable McIntosh. Honourable James?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think the framework for the trade report looks very good. I just have two comments. So one is, you would have seen in the BRRR that there is an above average increase in the allocation for trade promotion. In fact, it's I calculated the percentage, but it's somewhere to the order of 25% increase over last year. So that's significant. And the second point that I wanted to make is that I think the whole question of industrial planning being the strategic foundation for trade, Chair. Okay, what I was saying, that the whole question of industrial planning being the basis for strategic trade is an innovation in policy brought about by Minister Davies. And since this, in fact, is a reflection on the last 5 years, and not just the last year, of trade promotion, it would be very interesting to know whether that's made a difference numbers-wise to trade. That is, if we simply we had no strategy. We just simply said, listen, let's just trade more. Let's just do more of what we already do. Send more unbeneficiated minerals overseas and so on and so forth. So the actual trade, the performance, the trade performance with the strategy for industrial planning is something that should be assessed in some way or the other. And I'm not sure whether it's possible to do that numbers-wise. And the third point is we've clearly moved, we've taken seriously, the DTI and the Ministry has taken seriously the idea of fostering and promoting economic diplomacy, where we now expect our consular and our embassy officials and the trade representation in those institutions to have as their first priority, or at least a high priority, the promotion of South Africa abroad. And I think the whole question of economic diplomacy should feature somewhere in the report.
Yes, I don't, we're not opposed to that, Honourable Salam.
Chairperson, I think first and foremost our mandate from day one has been trade and industry. That is the bottom line. So there is no sudden about it. It has been a mandate from day one when this portfolio was created by the President. But second point, I think we must be awoke to the situation that this world has changed in this particular area. You used to have your Eastern Bloc and your Western Bloc fighting against each other economically and not trading with one another. And we are, and that day is gone. We are in this transition of a new approach towards trade. And we thank you very much, Madam Chair, for having introduced this particular important item on the changes in relation to trade policy and in relation to who we trade with, to the fore, for the beginning of discussions, which discussions must continue, not only in South Africa, but throughout the world. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honourable Salah. I think all the points being made now at least have one thing in common. It recognises the importance. There's just a different point of view on did this start today, a sudden burst of energy, or was it something that has been ongoing? But perhaps if we compared the three core mandates, has not received as much attention, even now, that we would like to give it as we talk. We're not giving it sufficient. Because if we were giving it sufficient, we would give it 2 weeks. We don't have that time. And that's always been the case. We've had a bill on our plate. So we're simply acknowledging reality, which is what this committee is very good at, being realistic. So I thought that I didn't simply want to say to you, here it is, I needed you to see, appreciate the context in which this was happening itself. I do take on board the point that you've raised, Honourable James. Well, if we're saying X, Y, Z, have these fresh strategies, if you like, resulted basically being a positive outcome, or worse to that effect anyway. And I think that the if on here, we have also got, just trying to recall, because I spoke to you, didn't I, Ms. Naidoo, about something coming from either the Reserve Bank or the IDC. The input on the 30th of October on the state of the economy. Now that, by the way, has already been given in this Parliament, I understand. And those of you who have members of the party in finance, perhaps you could talk to them on the matter. So, not to do with trade and industry, there's an independent position there, which is given, and which also enables us from there to draw a clear conclusion as to what has been happening over this period, you see. And I'd like to check with Mr. Hermans, if that has been distributed electronically, will you please distribute it today so that everyone gets it this afternoon? Right. And also, is this Sadia? Oh, the Reserve Bank made this, yes. Well, there we are. We're all well aware that there are these different outlooks on the economy at the moment. As you know, I mean, you all read and you listen to what the Governor of the Reserve Bank has to say, as well as the Minister of Finance, as well as the Minister of Trade and Industry. So nobody can say that they are ignorant of what is called slightly different approaches to the interpretation of the economy. So I think that that will provide us with an open position. All right? Now I'm looking, it's 10 to 10. Happy to see we've got everyone on track. So members, I'd like someone to propose we move along in that direction, please, that I've just mapped out. Yes, Honourable Salah?
Chairperson, I would like to move that we move in that direction.
Thank you, Honourable Salah. Seconded by Honourable James. Any objections? No. Right. Thank you very much, members. Just once again underpins that we're not too parochial in our operations in the committee. Thank you. Now we move on in the agenda to the input from the Parliamentary Legal Advisor. But on this note, I would like to officially welcome, you've been sitting here for some time, DDG, I must say that, getting your roller skates on and getting here before us again. Thank you very much. Welcome the DDG of Trade and Industry in this area, and that is Ms. Zordwa Mthuli. I'd also like to welcome Ms. Suraj Naidu there, always ensuring we're in touch with what the department's up to. And also welcome our own Parliamentary Legal Advisor, Advocate, got it right this time, Charmaine van der Merwe, who's going to give us a little colour-schemed matrix here. Oh, I've got mine, Ms. Hurley. I'll hand over to you immediately, Ms. Advocate van der Merwe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, good morning, members. Before I get to the document that is up on the projector, part of what I would like to address this committee on is the public submissions that were received on this bill. Now, from the legal services side, we've had an opportunity before this bill was introduced to work through it with the honourable member who was going to introduce the bill. We've made some comments. In general, the bill is constitutional. None of its provisions are unconstitutional. The bill does not conflict with any law that is in existence. The only concern that we could point out is that there is a law before Parliament, a bill, that is quite similar in nature. But that was the only concern that people could point out. We could make some drafting comments and things like that, and some of the aspects that we did raise came out in the public submission. So I will just carry and just address all of them at once. And you will note, in fact, that the bill does not have many legal concerns, but the concerns that I do have might be a lot of work that has to be done depending on the instruction that we received from the committee. Now, the public submissions, I thought it would be beneficial for members if I do a high-level summary of the comments rather than go through them clause by clause, so that, because like I said, there's a lot of work that will be done, and when I deal with it, members will understand what I'm talking about, so that when the committee, if this bill is deliberated on clause by clause or voted on clause by clause, when we consider any amendments to a clause, that we at that stage look at that aspect. First of all, one of the high-level concerns that came out in a number of clauses And I can maybe highlight the clauses where this is raised also in the public submissions. Those clauses 2, 3, 4, 9, 13, 14, 17, 26, 29, 30, 31, 38, and 41, is that the bill makes reference to the Copyright Act, to the Designs Act, and the public submissions were saying that if this is to be a standalone bill, it would be better for those definitions and aspects to be included in this bill, so that this bill can fully be read by itself. And that was also something that, our office felt. If this bill is to be a standalone bill, it would be preferred that rather than a reference to a current principal act, the bill specifically provides what the committee feels is applicable. And then building on that, and there were a few comments made by, members of the public as well on some of the clauses, where they would say, but some protection is provided in the current intellectual property system, but not in the Protection of Traditional Knowledge Bill. And there our office feels that it would be a necessary exercise to work carefully, and the department will have to assist in that regard, especially since this will be the bill that the department will administer, should it be passed as an act. So that we make 100% sure that the current IP law system, whatever protection is provided to those specific types of IP, where applicable, of course, because we know that, IP law isn't 100%. It was explained last night as well. Although both of the Protection of Traditional Knowledge Bill, although it deals with IP, it is setting something there that is quite unique. so if something is applicable, that protection is in fact included in this bill. So, and that is why I'm saying that I think there's a lot of work there so that we make 100% sure that traditional knowledge is as protected as it can be should this bill go through the whole process and be implemented. The other aspect is the question of proxy ownership and benefits. Now, on this aspect, some of the areas, some of the clauses in the bill aren't 100% clear on what the manner of the proxy would be. Would it be an agreement? Is it a person? Or is it a representative that uses an authority? So I think that must just be made a little bit clearer. The end result is actually that how that will work is a policy decision. So once the committee has made that decision, we can make sure that that is how the draft bill, the bill then reads. The other aspect is an issue of published versus unpublished works. Now, from legal services side, we have a concern that there might be a little bit of a confusion here. But again, I think if we take into account what the legal definitions of published is, then it becomes a policy decision. At what stage does a work, a traditional, in fact, last night we heard the term, a cultural expression, when that is published. So once we have that policy decision, we can then always, also from legal services side, in cooperation with the department, so that we have that wording clear, make those amendments to the bill, if necessary, of course. Then in clauses 2, 3, 4, 40, and 41, there were proposals to align the bill with the Swakopmund Protocol. Having read those clauses, I don't see any concern in including them in the bill. Apologies, I just pressed something here and the whole document moved. I'm not on the document yet. no, I'm simply talking in general still. Apologies. So, yeah, I'm starting just by highlighting the legal issues because there's only 4 or 5 legal issues, and then I would like to take members through this document. So, in relation to the Swakopmund Protocol, again, it's a policy decision, but the sections that were quoted seem to be highly beneficial, and I would recommend that the committee considers that. Then the last legal concern is more from a drafting side, which is not really something that members need to concern themselves terribly. It's more to make sure that the bill is 100% aligned to the drafting conventions. So, but as I said, that will also come when, should the committee go through the bill clause by clause, we will point that out. Now, for me, so those are the legal concerns. And you can see that, that although they might have a big impact, it's not that they are quite significant. They request or they require policy decisions to be made, and then we need to make sure that the bill does reflect those policy decisions. The bigger issue on this bill is a couple of high-level policy decisions that the...
What's going on here? Now, we're not about to listen to the latest races that Scott...
Thank you, Madam Chair. A number of policy decisions that I would like to point out to the committee that has to be made in respect of this bill is, for instance, the definition proposed for traditional customary expression, traditional knowledge, traditional leader, traditional mark. And members will remember, if I can take you back to the IP Laws Amendment Bill, those were also quite topical and aspects that had to be very carefully decided because they determine the ambit of the bill. The aspect of provision for secret and sacred traditions, reducing traditional knowledge into writing in order to qualify for protection or not, limitations on use, something that came out quite significant was the perpetual protection. The common law claim of passing off, whether that should be applicable to traditional knowledge or not. The formalities, and I think last night that also came out. What should be the formalities for registration? Should there be a registration? And so on. The other aspects that came under criticism from the public was the creation of a council, the fund, a separate registrar's office separate from the CIPC. The other aspect also was the standard license fee and how that should operate. Alternative dispute resolution, restricting the importation of copies, and additional clauses were proposed in relation to benefit sharing, management, administration. Now, those are all policy decisions that relate to the content of the bill. But there is also, and that is why I left it for last, and I think these are the most important policy decisions that this committee will have to take. Thank you, Madam Chair, I will. I left the last few policy decisions for last. I will only give them now, simply because these affect the whole of the bill as such. First of all, is the protection of traditional knowledge uncompetitive? This is a comment made by the Competition Commission. Is it uncompetitive? And I think that's a very significant policy decision because that would determine whether it should be protected at all. The next policy decision that is very important is whether the protection of traditional knowledge should be taken out of, under from the umbrella of intellectual property. Now, last night I understood from Professor Owen Dean that he did regard it as a type of intellectual property. So, in fact, if that decision is made by this committee, it will be a total departure from the bill that is before the committee. But that was a comment raised by the public, and it is absolutely a policy decision. So, whether it is uncompetitive to protect it, whether it should be protected, if so, under intellectual property, the animal under intellectual property, and then, of course, whether the protection of traditional knowledge will sufficiently provide protection for traditional knowledge. So should it be added to? And then the last one, which is the most important one, is there is currently before Parliament a bill that deals with the protection of cultural expressions, which is what we are dealing with in this bill. And it's in respect of that policy decision that I want to take members through the document on the screen, but quite quickly, because my intent is not so much to do a comparison. What I'm trying to show members is that the Protection of Traditional Knowledge Bill and the IP Laws Amendment Bill are trying to achieve the same thing. There are a few policy issues that are different between the two bills, but in general, their content aims to achieve the same objectives. And in the end, the biggest policy decision that this committee will have to take is whether this committee, arguing has answered all those questions of should traditional knowledge be protected? Is it uncompetitive? If we decide it's not uncompetitive, it should be protected. Should it be protected under IP? And if all of those questions are, no, it is not uncompetitive. Yes, it must be protected. Yes, it must be protected under intellectual property. The biggest question is how? And that how is the where the difference comes in between the two bills. That's the major difference. I'm not saying the bills are 100% exact. Like I said, there are policy differences. But should it be by an amendment to each of the different IP laws, the IP legislation that is out there, which is what the department argued for last night, or should it be in a standalone bill as is currently before this committee? And I think that almost is the crucial question that must be answered before the committee can move on this bill. So if I can take the committee through this document, just to highlight the changes, you will see that it's mainly policy issues. Here, on one aspect, the one bill provides a little bit more. On the other one, the bill before the committee provides a little bit more. So if we start on page one, we will see that the IP Laws Amendment Bill also specifically includes musical works. On page one, the IP Laws Amendment Bill specifically includes musical works. Other than that, the adaptation is more or less the same. Traditional design, we will see that this is actually merely a using of words that changes. The one refers to any design, whereas the IP Laws Amendment Bill is slightly more restrictive and putting it into either aesthetic or functional, which is the current terms that we have. IP Laws Amendment Bill talks about heritage, whereas the Protection of Traditional Knowledge speaks about in terms of which no individual maker is known. So if we go to page two, in respect of a traditional mark, we will see that, again, it is simply a matter of how it is described. In that, we find that there are differences. But those, I think, in the end, are policy issues. Both of the bills do protect a traditional mark. In the Protection of Traditional Knowledge Bill, we have something, it's a mark used or proposed to be used by a person in relation to goods or services for the purpose of distinguishing the goods or services. On the other side, the IP Laws Amendment Bill includes a geographical indication, which is not included in the Protection of Traditional Knowledge Bill. The next aspect, traditional work, again, that distinction between heritage versus no individual maker. Traditional community, I think members will recall that when we looked at the IP Laws Amendment Bill, Indigenous community was one of the big contentious issues, and it was, I think, a couple of meetings were spent on establishing what exactly is a traditional community. So I think that I don't have to go in too broadly, because once the committee gets to Indigenous community, I'm quite certain that the same debate will have to ensue there as well. In respect of conditions for protection of copyright, in the IP Laws Amendment Bill, we have an additional aspect where if a work is capable of substantiation from the collective memory of a relevant Indigenous community, that would also be protected. In relation to a traditional work right, the IP Laws Amendment Bill includes certain aspects like the reproducing of the cinematograph, film, television broadcast, and so on. Now, this actually relates to one of the aspects where I said we need to be very careful in looking at the current IP systems and see the protection, what is there, and see whether that protection can be translated onto traditional knowledge and the protection thereof. And if so, then we need to include that. I'm going on to page four. A traditional work right, there is not a big issue. It is simply that the IP Laws Amendment Bill makes it a little bit broader and includes certain specific sections in the current Act that is not specifically indicated in the Protection of Traditional Knowledge Bill. General exceptions. One thing that the IP Laws Amendment Bill provides for, and this was one of, I think, one of the last amendments that we made to the bill, was where the value that is derived is less than a prescribed amount, then the registration and the request for permission, etc. Sorry, not the registration, but the request for permission to use the work would not be applicable. And the concern there, it was in relation to people who are standing on the street and selling something, and the income that they derive is really negligible. And should we then require those people to pay royalties and so on? So that is an extra exception that was included there, which should the protection of traditional knowledge bill proceed and we go clause by clause, is something that we can consider when we reach that clause. In relation to the duration of the traditional work right, this is one of the big policy issues, and I've already indicated that an Indigenous work in relation of the IP Laws Amendment Bill is perpetual, whereas if it is derived, if it is a derivative work, then the normal IP Laws will apply. In this regard, the difference that is made in the Protection of Traditional Knowledge Bill is whether the work is published or unpublished. And members will recall that I said that we must make very clear what is published, when does publication occur, that we know exactly from when this is applicable. And this is where the importance of that is, because that affects the duration of the right. The next aspect is the lapsing of traditional work right, where if in the IP Laws Amendment Bill it's not affected, there is provision made for the lapsing of the right under certain circumstances. Specifically, where a member of the committee claims copyright infringement in respect of a work. What I just pointed out on the IP Laws Amendment Bill was that there would be royalties payable by a person who wants to use the work. Then if we go on to the next page, page 6, the Register of Traditional Knowledge versus the National Database. And we'll see that both of the bills provide more or less for the same structure to be incorporated. But a number of the provisions in the IP Laws Amendment Bill aren't contained in the Register of Traditional Knowledge, in the Protection of Traditional Knowledge Bill. And that is something I think where the committee will have to be guided by the department, because in implementation of a bill, the department will have to indicate the type of clauses that would be required in order to make the register effective. And I think that is probably your big difference there. In respect of the National Council for Traditional Knowledge on the Protection of Traditional Knowledge Bill versus the IP Laws Amendment Bill, Council for Indigenous Knowledge, it's just a name that's different. The only difference there really is that less consultation is required when the members are appointed, and I think that's also a policy decision, who should be consulted. And I think we made some amendments to that in the committee. So the next aspect on page 7, the National Trust Fund. Now, here is quite a big difference. And I'm not sure if the committee was correctly advised yesterday. I was not 100% sure exactly what was being said, but it sounded to me like it was indicated to the committee that in the IP Laws Amendment Bill, money is paid into a trust fund, and that there is a discretion whether that money goes to the community. That was how the IP Laws Amendment Bill was introduced. That was highly criticized by communities.
Sorry, I'm going to stop you there because I need to listen to what you're saying.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So as I said, the concept of the money to be paid into the fund and was however that would be dealt with was highly criticized. And in the redraft that the committee did, it was specifically changed so that communities will receive their own funds, or where royalties are to be paid, will be paid directly to communities. But where a community felt that they weren't able to administer that collection of royalties, they would be able to approach the trust fund. So the trust fund was sort of a backup to assist communities. And the only time where it had to be paid to the trust fund is where the state was an owner. And the state, as an owner, because that was also a very contentious issue, the committee in the end decided that the state as owner will only be where the author cannot be determined, where the indigenous community is no longer in existence. And I think we gave the example of Mapungubwe, which is Trade and Industries, the little rhino, is their trademark almost. Or where the authorship, for whatever reason, cannot be shared between communities. So that is where it would be paid into the fund. Now, on the Protection of Traditional Knowledge Bill, the proceeds are paid into the fund, an administration fee is deducted, and then the rest of that is paid in terms of the community proxy, to the community proxy. So on both bills now, the money goes to the communities. Again, this is a policy decision. It was something that the committee had to take on the IP Laws Amendment Bill, given the criticism, and so in the end, the changes on the differences on that bit, it both goes to the community. On the IP Laws Amendment, it goes directly, but the community may request the fund to assist, whereas in the Protection of Traditional Knowledge, it is paid into a fund, it's an administration fee that's deducted, and the rest goes to the community. And that is by law, so it can't, there's no discretion on that matter. If we go to page 8, the standard license fee, in the public submissions, the standard license fee was quite criticized. A number of the persons who submitted was indicated that it shouldn't be a prescribed fee, etc. So this is definitely something where the committee will have to take a policy decision. What should be the situation with the standard license fee? And then also I can maybe just point out here that the community protocol, in the IP Laws Amendment Bill, the community protocol is an agreement that is reached within the community in the similar manner as is done on the, I forget the bill's name, Professor von Braun pointed it out to us in relation to, I think it is something, protection of patents, where there's a community proxy and the community works according to that proxy. Whereas in the Protection of Traditional Knowledge Bill, the community proxy is embodied in a person that represents the community. Again, nothing is wrong with either approach, it's a policy decision. And just to build onto that, in clause 38 on the bottom of page 8 is just that the indigenous community accordingly is deemed to be a juristic person so that they can act as a community. Whereas in the Protection of Traditional Knowledge, we have a representative in whom the proxy is vested. Then going on to page 9, there's in fact all of those clauses up to 42, the bills are very similar. 44, bills are very similar and regulations are provided for. So having gone through this document, members can see that both bills, the objectives, are very similar. Policy is the only difference between the two bills. And then of course the legal concerns that I pointed out, that we just have to look and be careful, because an IP Laws Amendment Bill, where the argument from the committee was to include it in the current laws, you have a safety net. With the Traditional Knowledge for Protection of Traditional Knowledge Bill, we don't have that safety net. So we need to make sure that whatever is protected is included in this bill, so that we don't have a bill where we have to make an amendment quickly within a year or two. So in the end, in summary, the biggest concern for this committee, or the biggest decisions for this committee, is which way should... Sorry, let me start here because I'm sort of already going ahead of myself. The committee needs to decide whether it is competitive to protect IP. If it is competitive to protect IP, then should it be, traditional knowledge. If it is competitive to protect traditional knowledge, should it be done under the umbrella of intellectual property? If so, should it be done in a standalone bill, which is currently before the committee, or should it be done in a bill that incorporates traditional knowledge into the current IP laws? And that, unfortunately, members, or fortunately maybe, I cannot advise members on. It is absolutely a policy decision. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Advocate van der Merwe. Just a minute. Very much for that input. I know that although we didn't receive these sort of in-depth copies, as it were, these notes, if you like, you know, will be made available to us and of course to everyone sitting here, including Professor Owen Dean. Now, there are just two matters I want to deal with before we proceed. First of all, welcome to the Chief Director, this area, Mr. McDonald Nietzsche-Kenzi. Hope I got that right. We've got, Sheila Shelby. And then also we have with us here the legal advisor. And just say the name again. It takes me a little while to get the pronunciation. Mr. Simpiwe Nganwana. So I've just got to practice that. All right. Thank you. We've also got at the back Karen Bosman, if you could come and join us here on the right. Otherwise, I'll think you belong to PMG or one of the media, and I need to know exactly who you are and where we are. I know your face. Now, there are two or three matters we want to deal with. One of them, of course, concerns the RIA. Where is this RIA that we had? Which was raised yesterday. Now, we're going to have to determine this, but the reality is, having looked at the Hansards, which are attached to our minutes when these issues come up at the time when they are discussed. The issue has come up two or three times at different meetings. At the time, among the members present was the Honourable Tim Harris. By the way, you're very welcome, Honourable Oriani Ambrosini. Thank you again. And that is the regulatory impact analysis, which had come up several times and was made clear by the department that this is actually a confidential document. That's what my Hansard has indicated here. It would seem, and I'm using the word advisedly, it would seem, because this is the copy, member Mr. Herman's copy here. It's got it very clear, confidential, for members only underlined. We sometimes get some documents here from the AG or whoever, and we're entitled to restrict their use until the department makes it more available. Now that is my understanding of the document that is here. What I do have to do, given its confidential nature, I'm going to pursue this further with the table, and until such time as I've received that, and I won't keep you waiting, I will try and ascertain that today, and if not today, Monday. Because we do try to, we've learnt over the last 4.5 years how important it is to follow rules and processes and to respect and observe them, as the Constitutional Court has pointed out to Parliament over the last 14 odd years, as it were, since its inception. So until that is done, and I expect to have the final position known to me, made known to me on Monday, also very clearly in writing the position, just a little email to me officially from the department through the DDG, I will then indicate whether or not this is in any position to be referred to here now, this document per se. So until that is done, please do not make use of the contents of the document. I will let you have my ruling on Monday. Now that has only come up once, and it came up, if I recall, Mr. Hermans, with a document that had been obtained through certain advocates with respect to, I think, one of the arms issue, and it was still sub judice. We couldn't use it per se, notwithstanding that the member, a member, had it in his possession. We couldn't use it. So I will really make my position quite clear. And there isn't anything, by the way, I don't like what often comes out in the press, some of the adjectives referred to when we make decision. I make this in the best interests of those who are tabling the bill, as well as those here as a committee who are applying their minds, because should we step outside of the correct processes, then we're outside of the law in this matter. And then the bill would have to return, as it were. So this is done in the interests of all of us sitting here today, and also in the interests of Parliament's integrity. Thank you very much, Mr. Hermans. Second issue, you may, Honourable, I mean, Professor Owen-Dean.
On the confidentiality issue of the RIA report, we looked into this. When I say we, Stellenbosch University looked into it, and we sought legal advice, and the advice we were given was that it is possible to declare certain documents confidential, which are submitted in support of legislation, but there's a procedure, a parliamentary procedure, which has to be followed in order to declare the documents confidential. Now, we could find no trace whatsoever that that procedure was followed in the case of the RIA report. In terms of the parliamentary procedure, as I was advised, it's not sufficient to simply put confidential on the document. There is actually a procedure that must be followed. So may I suggest that when you or whoever looks into this question, they also approach it from that point of view.
That is why I consulted Hansard and my own notes. And I think I've tried to explain, I have so many boxes of notes on this, that it would fill that front table. And that is why I stayed here so late last night, including the driver with me. Of course, he was in the luxury of lying down in his car. Honourable Ambrosini.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Since you are entertaining submissions on this matter, let me just make the quick point against the background of some expertise I've acquired in the past 3 years and serving on the Ad Hoc Committee on the Secrecy Bill. Just three quick points. First of all, in South Africa, there is no classifying authority now. There are no legal basis to classify anything. That's why we're adopting a new piece of law. The only basis is the NIST, the minimum standard security, and this general knowledge is unconstitutional. So for any organ of state to stamp something as confidential doesn't stand any ground. Surely doesn't bar me as a member of parliament for using the document however you want it. Point number one. Point number two, no organ of state has the power to withhold the document from you, Madam Chairman. It is you, as the chairman of this committee, who, on representation of the department, can withhold a document from the public. It is a committee decision. It's a parliamentary decision. And this is important from a president setting, because the day in which organ of state can come here and tell us we're not going to give you a document. You cannot consider a document because it's confidential. And this is whether it's the opposition or the majority party, then we are in big trouble. So we then the third point is that this document has been before us. We have read it. We have deliberated on it. We own it. And I don't see what's going to stop me from referring to it. I mean, it's clear. It's in our mind. We know what it says. I think that we would be not rendering a service to our own work if we were not going to make the references, because the department is uncomfortable with its contents.
So I should just add, my ruling is not based on the department's desires at all. It's based with, in fact, what we, the department never gave us the document marked confidential. This was in Mr. Herman's writing at my instructions. It's not in the department's writing at all. So I must make that clear. But I think this is why I reserved my right. You know, going through documents in 3 hours is not sufficient time for me. And this is why I'm requesting the time to come back the latest on Monday with that position. That is what I've asked. And I need to take into account exactly the sort of issue the Honourable Oriani Ambrosini has referred to here. And that is what happened in that other document. It was a committee decision that wouldn't be used, you see? Honourable Shoki Sitole?
Thank you, Chairperson. Just in passing, I heard Honourable Ambrosini referring to a secrecy bill. We don't have a secrecy bill. We don't have a secrecy bill in this Parliament. It is the Protection of State Information Bill, and since we are members of Parliament, it's better if we name the thing correctly, not copy from the media.
Yes, I gave that letter to the Honourable Ambrosini because he hasn't, you know, been with us for some time, and when I had also referred to that. So, you know, we just gave a little latitude on that one. I wasn't prepared to give any one latitude on this. Just one moment, I have seen the hand. Just a moment. Forgive us, we're not too familiar with uniforms down here, except those that are worn in Parliament. And when I see a uniform, I'm inclined to think of one of the units in the Army, or Correctional Services, or the Police Services. But I saw someone, when I said Army, you're busy nodding your head there vigorously. Now, what does the blue stand for? Is this some parachuting regiment or what?
No, we are logisticians, ma'am.
Logisticians.
Yes.
Well, pardon? Oh, well, of course, you are the important people that enables the army to keep on the move. Well done. Yeah. Well, no, we're not in a very military-minded frame here this morning, but we do appreciate the services of the Defence Force. I think I speak for all of us here. Thank you very much. So this is the intellectual, well, it is the Protection of Traditional Knowledge Bill, which is a private member's bill tabled by the Honourable James here. And that is what is on the table at the moment. I won't go further. Yes, Ms. Bossman.
Thank you, Chair. Just to clarify why the document was circulated, Professor Dean referred to it in the first meeting that he presented, and there was, in fact, a request from the committee that we circulate the documents that are being referred to. That's why it was circulated.
I think we appreciate that clarification. Thank you. We're all here trying to work together, and not from an antagonistic viewpoint, but observing the rules and requirements of Parliament. Thank you very much. Now we... Right. Now, just the final thing which I do want to dispense with, and I do have a position on, today with respect to the article referred to by the Honourable Khadebi, etc. Mr. Hermans had already made some inquiries about... Oh, sorry, Honourable Kubasa. It is Honourable Kubasa, yeah, not...
Yes, no, I wanted to comment about this document we just have a little quibble about and remind this committee that this issue came up in a committee meeting at the time when we discussed this issue. And the demand was made that this document be made available. We had a lengthy discussion around this issue, and we came to a conclusion that this document is an outcome of a contractual agreement between the department and the service provider. And that it cannot be exposed without the agreement of both parties that entered into that contractual agreement. The question then arises, has there been, since then, an understanding between the department and the service providers that this document can now be released to the committee?
See, that was what was captured in Hansard per se at the time. And this is why I am asking the committee, because I've asked the DTI to come back with a statement on the matter for us as a committee. Our position at the time, and this is why I noted that it remained confidential at the time. And I requested that that be done for Mr. Hermans, for the members only at that time. But I'm going to ask you, DDG, to respond purely to the question and not to go into the detail of today, which you will come back on. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chair. We have not received any request or permission to circulate the document beyond what was agreed in this committee. And hence, we were surprised to see the document circulating and it being referred to in various documents. Chair, just so that it is clear that the department had nothing to hide in that document, but as a matter of principle, we indicated that we had contracted a service provider to do some work for the department. It's a contract between us and that service provider, and there are terms in terms of how a document or the work that flow from that contract will be made available. We do believe that it is unethical for any person to use such a document without permission, and we do know the interest of using that document, and we have said that in the interest of transparency for this committee, we want the committee to have sight of the contents of that, because we can talk to that content, but that document was not presented to this committee as part of the documents that we presented for circulation. So, Chair, we still stand by it. The document was not for circulation, and it is now in the hands of people without the permission of the owners of that document. And that's where we start with the respect of other people's work. This is a government work that should continue to be respected. It is unethical.
Well, thank you, DDG, sorry for that clarification there. I'm just busy studying a document that's been given to me by the Secretary to the Committee. Thank you.
with respect to the issue raised by the Honourable Kajebi yesterday in, when he indicated he'd read an article which indicated clearly that Professor Owen Dean had written the bill, I've handed out to the committee the, I only found this online, and not in the Sunday Times, but it may well have been published there in August, but this is dated August the 20th. And it indicates in one of the paragraphs very clearly, the DA and other opposition parties, mindful of the damning criticism that had been voiced against IPLAB, felt that an error was being made by passing it. Dr. Wilmot James, the DA spokesman on trade and industry, tabled my draft bill in Parliament as a private member's bill. That was written by yourself, Professor Owen Dean, and not by a reporter. So I have already clarified the issue of bills with the table in this regard. And the ruling has already been made. The Honourable James wants to get professors, etc., to assist him and utilize their work, having engaged with him, then that bill may be tabled in Parliament. That is what concerns me here. Can it or can't it be? Do you follow? With respect for who claims they drafted it, whose bill it is, will become a matter between you and the Honourable James. But secondly, it's not your draft bill. It happens to be the Honourable James's draft bill, and not, as you wrote here in the article, my draft bill, an article which is put under your own name, but I will give you this. So will someone, Niran, will you make this available to Ms. Professor Owen Dean? So that matter, no, is now addressed. This bill is before the committee, and it is a private member's bill tabled by the Honourable James. I'm not entertaining a comment on the matter. I've made a ruling. I'm not entertaining a comment. We are obliged to stick by exactly the position that we're given here in the interpretation thereof. The other matter, we are still going to pursue and get a position on Monday. I hope I've made myself clear on that matter, taking everything into account. Now, what we'd like to do, it's 10:45, and being Friday, I don't know what it is, some members may want to kick up their heels or run into one of the townships, do some electioneering, but for whatever purpose it is, the committee... always asks me to try and complete early. However, we can't ask Professor Owen Dean to come here and then say goodbye the moment he sits down. So, Professor Owen Dean, you have heard the comments here, and in particular, the Honourable James, which the Parliamentary Legal Advisor has given to us. I would like to ask you, Honourable James, if you would continue to sit on that side while we are engaging on this. And at your direction, Professor Owen Dean will also speak. This is your bill. It's not his bill as far as this Parliament is concerned. Honourable Mackintosh.
I think your ruling is absolutely correct, and it is a Member of Parliament's bill. I'm sure none of us objects to getting expert input, and clearly it has been, and I think we're very fortunate to have somebody as eminent as Professor Dean giving us input. Madam Chair, I just want to commend this particular document which has arrived. PCKB number 38, I think it is. Yes. I think the committee, I don't know where it comes from, but it's a very helpful document for a simple farmer like myself to try to get through the complexities of the IP lab and the, what's it, I don't even know that it's a K or a P or a KTB or an IK, but anyway, the indigenous or traditional knowledge bill. But I just want to commend that to the members, particularly our new members who may be, like me, initially pretty confused by a lot of things.
Last night, the Honourable James did indicate that this was a document that they had prepared more for themselves per se, but we indicated that the committee was already just on the point. Well, in fact, we were requesting it, and that is when he indicated they had prepared this. And he would make it available for us to assist us in this work. But I may add, I don't regard you as a simple farmer. I would start talking of myself as a simple farmer, notwithstanding all my degrees. And I happen to know that you have a diploma's degrees, and I don't know what else, judging from your letters to me, because your qualifications are put below the letter, on that letter. So even farmers aren't necessarily simple farmers. They're well-informed and qualified. Thank you. Now, I'm a simple farmer for that matter. Right. Now, thank you. Can we then, Honourable McIntosh, just as well you're not in your skirt today, huh? Now, Honourable Salah.
Chairman, I think we are beginning to discuss this issue. And I think the starting point is the last closing question that I would think Father Mavra put us on. And if we read that question, we then say before us stand two arguments. The one argument says we need to separate indigenous knowledge from intellectual property and have sui generis rules. In which case, we need to have a bill that deals with the protection of traditional leaders outside of the intellectual property bill. That's what it says. That is the one argument. And the other argument says, we as trade and industry do not really want to deal with traditional or indigenous knowledge law. We want to deal, we are dealing with our IP law. And we are aware that in our intellectual property law, there are certain areas in the traditional life of trade. And these areas are suffering, and we want to protect those areas that are suffering. People are stealing other people's intellectual property, and people are robbing others, and other people are not able to get a platform through which they can defend these trade issues that belong to them. Now, it is only those aspects that we take. And this argument continues to further say, interdepartmental discussions have taken place with agriculture and with Department of Agriculture. And an agreement has been entered into that the rightful department to deal with this traditional knowledge law is arts and culture. All other departments can deal with it to the extent that it impacts on their mandates as different departments that deal with trade, deal with agriculture, and so on. But arts and culture can deal with the overall principal acts in respect of the protection of traditional knowledge. But more than that, it is important to note that the different departments have got certain areas where traditional land or traditional trade or traditional something to do with tradition impacts on the work of that department, and will take only that portion included into their own IT. Now, this begins to say to us, what we are sitting with here may be a matter that does not belong to this committee. We are sitting here with an important sui generis act, and the department continues to say, we are not here to argue whether the act should be justiced, whether sui generis, or it should be what? Whatever the act be, it's not an issue. An issue to us is, as trade and industry, this trade aspect of the traditional life comes to us and we want to protect it. That's all. I therefore want us to consider, Chairperson, these two presentations yesterday with what Advocate for the Environment says, that is the core, actually a point of departure on where we go from there. Then the rest of the content we can look at thereafter. My view, Chairperson, has suggested to the committee is that we should agree with the department that there must be a sui generis traditional knowledge act, but that act does not belong to trade and industry. It should be referred to where it belongs.
We're all entitled to our points of view. I have to recognize people in the order of hands being raised. The Honourable Ariane Ambrosini.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would like to speak a few words before Professor James probably does the closing remarks or brings us all together. And if I may, with your indulgence, Madam Chairman, just provide a perspective of a member of the subcommittee who work on the ILAP, that's how we call it now, Intellectual Property Amendment Bill. And but before I do so, Madam Chairman, I would like to congratulate you, salute you, and congratulate the WIPRI of the AFC for having allowed the process that you allowed. You served our democracy well. This is the first time in the history of South Africa that the Parliament looks at two bills at the same time and makes up its mind between different options. And nobody can say that you're not given this bill a fair chance. We have public submissions, extensive discussions, and I wish to express my personal appreciation. The second point, I wonder why Professor James keeps us here at 12 o'clock on a Friday when we might have better things to do. And I've been asking myself that. And the real answer is that it's because he cares. There are no votes in this matter. This is not a political issue. And Professor James is the chairman of the DA. He's a busy man. He's a big man. He's somebody who's got an international reputation. Probably has got better things to do. But he cared. And he cared because something went wrong. The entire legal profession recognized it. And we are not changing, we're not looking at different policies. There might be difference in nuances, but the thrust of what we're doing is the same. There is national consensus. We are all together on what to do. Something went very wrong on how to do it. And the cry that came from the internet, from the international legal fraternity and the domestic legal fraternity, that we messed up the entire system of intellectual property rights laws without creating a system which can achieve the protection of individual traditional knowledge. Now what do we do? And I understand the dilemma. The privilege of us having a mind is that we can change it. At the end, if this deal is passed, it's passed again, see. Yours is the power, always yours will be the glory, will be your passing it. It's not that Professor James put it through. It's been written by technical group, it could have been by somebody else. It's something that we have been struggling since the beginning with this generous approach. But we did not have an alternative to what the department gave us. Once this parliament grows into what ought to be, in a real democracy, this parliament will have many professors always deans at this disposal. This committee will have many drafters, and we will be able to ask them to redraft the bill completely. But right now we are not there. So this is a present setting, and my plea is give it a chance. Because it's not about politics. There are no winners or losers. We pass this bill because something that works. We don't pass this bill because something that doesn't work. And we are going to be blamed even more because we had the opportunity of fixing it. And we all look terribly. And I know that there are procedures in the department and there are people who need to be protected and all this, but I mean, all that can be finished up. What matters is the national interest. And I conclude, Madam Chairman, stressing the importance of this process. Because it's one in which we can assert as Parliament our independence of thinking and show our capability of correcting mistakes made by the Department. This is what all democracy is all about. Otherwise, we're rubber stampers. And the precedent of that is of immense importance, and it's not an oppositional majority issue. You are the AG, you are in power, you can choose what to do. And if you choose to pass Professor James' bill, you will be an ANC bill, you will have passed it. And in that you will assert Parliament primacy over any mistake of government. Very rarely I said in a committee in which all the public submissions from experts, from people who understand, are in support of a bill. We always face these public submissions which are divided and contradictory. So let us not lose this opportunity, which is historical and precedent-setting. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mariani Ambrosini. I'm going to take the Honourable Swanepoel next, and then follow it and ask you, Honourable Kubasa, to follow up after that. I have recognized you, Honourable James, but I wanted to allow, I know you're a member, but you're tabling the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've listened to what Advocate Fundamata said about the need or the request that a standalone bill be created by pulling in cross-references or pieces of the Copyright Act and the Intellectual Property Act, all that into a one standalone policy, one standalone piece of legislation. So I'm just trying to understand the process now, because if that holds true, then surely the converse also holds true, and that is that in the is it the IPAB lab legislation, there will have to be a cross-reference to the knowledge bill, and it must be as comprehensive as possible as well. Now, having dealt with business out there on an ongoing basis, I know that doing business in South Africa is already complicated enough, and we shouldn't complicate it any further. And therefore, my question is, do we really want more legislation or less legislation? And not meaning we mustn't cover this issue, I mean this issue must be covered, but having less pieces of legislation. That is just my thinking my comment that I'm making. And I would like Advocate Fundamara maybe to respond to that, or the department maybe to respond to that as well. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Honourable Swanepoel. Right, now we're going to get the Honourable James coming in at this point. But I just want to first recognize the Honourable Kwabasa, as I said, from my left.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just would request a bit of an explanation with regard to competitiveness, an issue that the family member raised. The question as to whether protecting indigenous knowledge or traditional knowledge is competitive or not. I can't get that around my head, if it could be explained. Or whether we have jurisdiction at all over protection of IK. And I want to argue that the point that was made by Comrade Filao next to me here earlier on holds true, that we are dealing with the issues relating to the protection of indigenous knowledge through the IP system as part of the mandate of the Department of Trade and Industry, and the issues relating to the commercialization thereof, the wanton theft of this intellectual property that has been going on over time, and huge benefits, financial benefits, it lost to the deserving communities. That's one. The second issue is yesterday, Professor Dean, and this morning, Advocate Fanemeze made the same point, that these two bills both seek to achieve the same objective. If that is so, why bring up a new bill? And I know the answer is going to be, no, we are dealing with the how part of it. But the how part of it was raised by Comrade Joe next to me, earlier on, that it belongs somewhere else and not here, if you want to deal with the how part. So, why is it brought here, if it seeks to achieve the same objectives as the intellectual property laws amendment bill? Is it part of the agenda to delay the passing of the intellectual property amendment laws amendment bill beyond 2014, so that those who are engaged in wanton looting of our intellectual property in the form of indigenous knowledge should continue to do so? Is it part of that agenda? And in whose interest are we therefore talking here, if we engage ourselves in an agenda that seeks to perpetuate the looting and exploitation of our indigenous knowledge to an absolute disadvantage of the already disadvantaged communities and individuals whose knowledge it is that we are trying to protect? The next area that I would like to talk to. You see, Chairperson, there is a consistent claim that there has been a wholesale rejection of the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Bill, and an overwhelming support of the Traditional Knowledge Protection Bill that sits before us. And it is a claim that is untrue. And those who are making this claim, unfortunately, know that that is untrue, and they are wasting our time and delaying the passing of the bill that is already has gone through the processes of Parliament. Again, for processes
for purposes of ensuring that the wanton looting of our indigenous knowledge and enrichment of those who are already advantaged continues unabated and untempered. So we are told this bill is not going to see the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Bill is not going to see the light of day until 2014. What does it mean? This current administration will fail to pass this bill, and probably those who come in the next administration will have to start all over again. A further 10 years of wanton looting of our indigenous knowledge and total disadvantage to our communities. So, whose interests are those that are saying we must now waste our time and delay the passing of the bill that has gone through Parliament? The ownership of the state is being rejected here. This issue was debated at length at committee level at the time. And the salient point that came through was there could be a situation where the individual originator does no longer exist. And the community has probably gone extinct. But this individual knowledge continues to exist. And it is a South African indigenous knowledge, and it has got to be protected. You are now telling us through this bill that we should open up that individual, traditional knowledge for continued wanton looting of it. And the state must not play a role in protecting what is South African, in the interest of the South African people, and therefore that the state must become the custodian of that particular individual knowledge and protect it in the interest of the South African people. The next thing we are going to hear is that when we must let go of the rooibos tea and the honeydew tea and the Southlandia and so on and so on and so on, supposing those communities have gone extinct at some particular point and the state should not fail. Whose interest are we serving when we say the state cannot protect a South African indigenous knowledge when it so happens that the originator, whether be it the individual or the community, does no longer exist, but that indigenous knowledge continues to exist and it is a South African indigenous knowledge?
Thank you, Honourable Kwabasa. Now, I think it's when you come on and we go over to your side, Honourable James, and your team, and in your responses, I think it's very pertinent to address the policy issues that were raised by our own parliamentary legal advisor itself, apart from what has been raised here by our members, some of them in full support of the bill that is here, and others not in a full support with the tabling of that bill. But one of the points that all share is that there seems to be some convergence between the two bills that, you know, they want to achieve the same thing, but how best do they do it? And there isn't anyone who is disagreeing on that, but they are having different comments, positions on your bill, the Honourable James's bill that was tabled, the PKB, and in fact the one that's in the so-called pipeline of Parliament, meaning the National Council of Provinces. And I must say, Parliament per se has not passed the bill again, you know, as it's gone through, it's still in that process. Right, over to you, Honourable James, and your team.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And let me just express my appreciation for all the comments made thus far. There's a thread running through the commentary that questions my motives and tries to discredit this bill by making remarks about what interests I may be serving. I would like to explain to this committee my involvement in this particular area, which starts when I served on a special committee to former President Nelson Mandela to work on three projects. The first project was to come up with a new name for Westbrook, which is on the Glipperskeer Estate, which is the presidential residence. And it was my principal responsibility to come up with a new name for it. And I conducted some research in it and believed, given President Mandela's instruction, that he wants the new name to be an expression of gratitude to the contribution of colored South Africans to the building of the nation, that it be renamed Gamatendal. And it was accepted by him, and it was so renamed. In the course of doing that, I had to deal with the question of intellectual property around the Heritage Act. The second part, task that I had, which was done together with Dr. Mampela Rampela, is to pursue the recommendation that the Department of Arts, Culture, Science, and Technology had to be split into two. It had lumped together different kinds of enterprises in the same department. President Mandela accepted that request, and you would have noticed that after his term came to an end, when President Mbeki was involved, those two departments were created. And in the process of that creation, it vested the Department of Science and Technology as the host for the indigenous knowledge systems. That's where it is today, and that's where it was. This country's strategy when it comes to indigenous knowledge, the host department is in DST. But because, colleague, the trading rights around the intellectual property is an important aspect of dealing with the exchange of goods, it must come to DTR. It's a trade aspect, and therefore that's why this bill is sitting here today. But in terms of history, I was intimately involved. I was at the Human Sciences Research Council as an executive director, looking at innovation systems as my principal responsibility, together with Michael Kahn, who is a senior advisor presently to Minister Dirk Hanekom, to design the indigenous knowledge systems approach when it comes to our approach to what happens in this country. And in the process, I have working knowledge of something called the Woodier Project. Now, you would know that Woodier is a plant type, right? And that it has appetite suppressant properties in its chemical compounds. And so you can see the commercial aspects in terms of developing swimming tablets. Woody has been used mostly by sun communities, not koi communities, but sun communities, as an appetite suppressant over long periods of hunting that they had to do. They also had a special ability to retain water, which is partly genetically encoded in the way in which their kidney systems operate. But in order to deal with this question of theft, you'd speak about theft, sir, and biopiracy, what had to happen is that the active chemical properties you find in the Woodier plant had to be registered as a patent, which is what happens with any pharmaceutical product. And this is exactly what they did. The potential was recognized. The patent had to be taken out. You don't take a patent out on a plant. You take a patent out on the active chemical property which can be identified. That's what you do, and that's what they did. But it was taken out because nobody knew who the originators of this was. It's traditional knowledge. It was the people who did it was the CSIR, the state body, which is involved in part of our science and innovation system. It's been commercially, and then what happened, because the authors of this, the owners of this could not be identified, they had a profit-sharing scheme involving a big company called Unilever, and then part of the profits went to an identified institution representing the sun communities. It turns out that this thing has been moderately successful commercially, not a lot of money involved. It turned out, this is what we learned from it, that the registration process was cumbersome as you see in the IPRAB, extremely cumbersome. The CSIR took out the patent, and some community benefit went to the sign community, some. The second lesson we learned from this is that the state's role in this should be limited to facilitating the transfer of money to those communities. As soon as you give the state an interest in extracting a benefit from this, you set up a system whereby it's the interest of government officials and politicians to want to control something that should be going to communities. I tell you this to show that I have long-standing interest and expertise in this subject. It's not about me, but I've been involved in this business for a long time, and I have a powerful interest in it because I've seen how it works on the science side of it and the pharmaceutical side of it, which is where the money lies. I mean, artistic exploitation can also generate quite a bit of money, but we have to be very careful in our country to stop biopiracy by having patent protection when it comes to our heritage that can be exploited in the interest of people other than ourselves. But this is something else. This is not biopiracy, which is why the comment yesterday was utterly ill-informed, misdirected. This has nothing to do with biological products. What we have before us is an effort to protect our cultural expressions. And so what we need to do is have robust protection of this country's people's cultural expressions, because we want to prevent the theft of those things. And so it's precisely the point of having the TKB. The Traditional Knowledge Bill is an effort to protect our cultural expressions, not our biological properties, not pharmaceutical products, nothing to do with science, it has to do with the arts. That's what it is. And it's our firm conviction and belief, and we made our case, that the TKB is much better suited to do precisely that than the IPRAB, for reasons we've rehearsed and gone over in great detail. Now, let me just close on the subject by saying, and I thank Honorable Ambrosini for just pointing out, I have no interest in this politically in terms of its effect. It's not about votes. And I take grave exception yesterday to the comment that I'm serving as conduit for somebody else, that I was being used by Professor Dean simply as his master's voice. I take profound exception to that point. It's an assault on my integrity. I also take profound exception to saying that I serve some global international interest wanting to delay the passage of the IPRAB because I must have global capitalism behind me, or we do, in order to allow for the continued theft of this country. I have a profound exception to that. It's not my intention, it's not my motivation, and in everything I've put before you, it is to protect indigenous knowledge, not to allow it to be raided by anybody. I'm as much a citizen worried about what happens in this country as you are. So, but not to get to moral about this, I wanted to say that what we have before us is an opportunity to introduce a robust piece of legislation that will look after our country's indigenous cultural expressions. And that is what's before us. But because those are tradable things, you take out a patent in order to allow trade to happen. You take out a trademark in order to have trade to happen. That's why you do it. That's why you protect it. It belongs in this committee. This is a trade committee. It may belong, the aspects of this would affect what happens in the Department of Arts and Culture. There's no question about it. You know that it sits in the DSD, Department of Science and Technology. So clearly other departments have an interest in this. But when it comes to matters of trade, it belongs in this committee. So I disagree powerfully with what you have to say. I have a number of other questions I'd like to leave for the department to deal with. And I will raise what those questions are. They need to be answered, given the presentation they made yesterday. But I'd like to, if that's okay, hand over to Professor Owen Dean having laid that groundwork.
Yes, Honourable James, you see, I would not like to hear continuation of various allegations. I think when we brought certain things here, the Honourable Becky Fadebe was speaking, having been, not unlike me, I had not seen the article that was referred to earlier on, which he said was in the Sunday Times. It wasn't. It's the sort of mistake we all make. That's why I couldn't find it to begin with. It was actually in the Cape Times, which one got online. And it is the sort of thing you can expect when we do see the draft bill, perhaps in a slightly different form here and there, but we do see it 4 years ago or 3 years ago, before you were part of this committee. We see it. We say no. And then it comes up again, and you can appreciate that the Honourable Fadebe reading this, you can't read this in any other way when someone says tabled my draft bill. You can't read it in any other way. So, you see, this is why I said, you know, what is printed here, there was foundation for what the Honourable Fadebe had said in that regard. And if you recall, Professor Owen Dean made it clear that he knew nothing about it and he'd never claimed that, and a reporter had written it. So I myself was surprised to learn it had Professor Owen Dean as the crafter of that article. So I think we're going to now not focus on the essence, the substance of what is here. And so I would appeal that we acknowledge that, yes, indeed, there were grounds for people believing that aspect. Where the other aspects are with respect to our knowledge leaving the country unprotected, this came up strongly in a box of documents. Here is just one file of it, one from the task team. And I would appeal to you to request from one of your colleagues who sat on that task team. I know that the Honourable Ariane Ambrosini tried as often as he could to attend that, but he sat on several committees at the time. And it came up very clearly that, yes, we did not have sufficient protection. And, yes, there was a lot of money involved in this, and that is why we had this interest coming. That came and was explored by the task and in the task team. And members of all parties were present there. They sent members there. So this is not something that's fabricated here. It is information coming to us from a broad grouping of people which are made available to you, including WIPO. And by the way, that was an expression they used in their engagement with us. So I must make that clear. Their engagement with us. This issue of professors and scientists going to these communities, in Africa and where else, and then a tweak here and there. This came from them. So I think, it's a lot of information. I had to refresh my mind last night. So when you wonder where people have got this from, Honourable Kwabasa was very closely engaged with that team. So were you, Honourable Ariane Ambrosini. And certainly have not misrepresented anything here, and we thank you. But I don't think anybody has, and I must make that clear. You can see how appearances are when things are said here. I didn't utilize this time to do a critique of that article. I didn't, because that would have been abusing my position here. I simply referred to the item that was relevant. And I want you to look at these people who did not come here as ANC members at all, but from the international community, highly respected in their fields,
who gave input. And I think those documents, if you don't have them, Honourable James, and Honourable Tim Harris has not seen fit to give them to you, I suggest you get them, because they will be highly informative. The very points that you've made about this drug where I could be losing some weight was referred to by Mr. MacDonald, Nyatsi Tenzi, in detail. And yes, we do acknowledge your contribution to the country. I don't think that's ever been disavowed. And we must make that clear. But when it comes to this bill, yes, this bill is in Parliament. And we have taken and exercised our powers to amend it, virtually recraft it, which the Department acknowledges, but with their cooperation, led by our own advisers, plus the Honourable, the Advocate, Van der Merwe, and we tried our best. But you will recall that the Honourable Sue Van der Merwe, at the time when she was here in Parliament, and she headed the task team, in her speech she made it clear that this bill would provide a solid foundation. Get the speech out. But that we are all aware that we need from time to time to review. And we called for further investigation by the department and work on policy. Now, I haven't yet found new policy documents in relation to the private members' bill. But for that matter, it is not a requirement, as you know. It is not a requirement of the interim rules. And we accept that. We accept that. So I just want to caution all members now, let's tackle the substance here, and let us leave these, I don't know, because if I want to start now engaging on certain documents, I'll stay here till 3. And that's not my intention. Let's tackle the substance. You have given us an input, Honourable James. You are at liberty, before I call for a 5-minute break, comfort break, to ask Professor Owen Dean to add.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Like Dr. James, I have got the feeling that I'm under attack in this whole discussion as well. Now, I just want to say this. I stopped practicing as an attorney in 2010. I'm now a professor at Stellenbosch University. I have no vested interest in any aspect of this matter. I don't represent any clients. I don't earn money out of anything I'm doing there. All the work I've done on this bill has been for no payment at all. My interest in this matter is the integrity of the law. I have practiced intellectual property law for 40 years, and I want to ensure that intellectual property law stays in good shape.
And on that note, let's leave it, because I have requested as chair that we tackle the substance. Professor Owen Dean.
I just want to make one further point, and that is that I would just go back in
yes, well,
in
I'm hearing.
No, I'm not. I'm leaving that point.
Yes, I want to hear the substance.
Well, I just want to say one thing, and that is that some years ago, when the Rugby World Cup was about to be played in South Africa, I was approached by the Department of Sport and the South African Rugby Board to devise legislation to deal with the issue of ambush marketing. Ambush marketing was a very important issue for these kind of major events. I prepared a draft. It never went anywhere because there was not sufficient time to really get it through Parliament at that stage, and the whole thing was put to bed. 8 years later, in 2003, MacDonald Netsepenzi came to me and he said to me,
"You know what? You have not heeded my request. Let me tell you, I have stopped deputy ministers in their tracks. And I want to say to you right now, I'm stopping you in your tracks, Professor. I want the substance of this legislation.
The substance.
I am not here because I'm popular, either with my party or in Parliament.
So the substance has to be seen against a background, and I'm trying to sketch the background, if I may. Now, McDonald Betts Tensley came to me and said, we need to produce urgently a bill dealing with ambush marketing. Can you help me? I said, I have a draft which I prepared 8 years ago, which I think is... I can't understand why I'm not being given...
No, you're not addressing the substance. This bill is... This bill in front of us is the protection of traditional knowledge. If my own members pursue this, they've all known that I don't give them this leeway. And
right.
I have no intention of giving anyone else after I've made a ruling. I've not given it to a deputy minister, and I'm not giving it to anyone else.
On a point of order, Madam Chair, many things have been said about Professor Owen Dean, including by yourself. He has a right to respond. And I'm asking you to give him that right to respond. He does.
No, I have not. I said that I will respond in my own time to what I've just seen here. I've read out an article. He wrote 3 lines. Now, I'm not going to accept that point of order. I am going to say that Professor Owen Dean, and we've repeatedly said that, you've been in on this for some time. We know your credentials. We do know them. Nobody is disputing them. Nobody. So, I want you, because you have the capacity to address this. You do have the capacity. And I'm asking the Honourable James to direct the person who worked with you to give us this bill. And I think what you ought to both take cognizance of, that what has been said here by the parliamentary legal advisor is that yes, there are some key policy differences, but she also indicates that there's some convergence. I don't see that as a criticism. Asking us to focus on the role of the National Council in collecting and distributing, I think the document is here. And the license fee, etc. You've made some points here which have been referred to and we're being asked to look at. And I would really appeal to you to look at those issues because we have heard it repeatedly said by yourself as well, yourself last night, that you're trying to achieve the same thing, both bills. However, X, Y, Z. Can we please have that spelled out again? You know, if you want to drive home a point, repeat it more. I asked the advocate to repeat her points 3 times because they were important. Will you do the same thing if you want to actually persuade us? There are people here who do support you in the committee. And yourself, Honourable James, and you know it. And this is on Hansard. Thank you.
The comment has been made repeatedly throughout these discussions that the IP Lab Bill uses IP. It uses its focus is to use IP to protect traditional knowledge. The flip side of the coin is that it is somehow suggested that the PTK Bill is outside intellectual property, that it is not relying on intellectual property. Now that is absolutely wrong. That is a total fallacy. I said last week when I spoke that intellectual property is a family of property rights, which consists of patents, trademarks, copyright, designs primarily, and that traditional knowledge is a new member of that family. And I don't mean new in the sense that it has the traditional knowledge itself has not been present. I say it's a new member of the family in that for the first time an effort is being made to protect traditional knowledge as a type of intellectual property. So It's totally wrong to suggest that somehow the PT cable is not seeking to use the intellectual property system. Quite the contrary is true. So to the extent that anybody is under the illusion that IP Lab is plugging into the intellectual property system and PTK is not doing so, please accept that is certainly not so. The main difference between the two bills, as pointed out by Advocate Fundamental, is the question of what form this protection should take. There is an enormous amount of commonality between the two bills. In fact, if I go through the department's documents, the slides which they presented last night, I find myself in complete agreement with the first 10 slides. I could have written those myself to justify the PT cable. All of those policy issues, what are we trying to achieve, what was said about IP Lab applies 100% to the PT cable as well. The difference in form is important. The difference in form is important for two reasons. Firstly, if you are trying to inject traditional knowledge into the existing statutes, you're coming up against concepts and principles with which traditional knowledge cannot comply. As I've mentioned this previously, for instance, a design must be new and original. You can't go and register a design unless it is new and original. Now, there is no way that traditional knowledge, an item of traditional knowledge, can ever meet that test. So you are never going to get a valid design registration for traditional knowledge. It's simply an impossibility. The same applies to copyright. If you want to rely on copyright to protect your works, you have to show that the work is original. There is no way that you can show that a work of traditional knowledge meets that originality test. So your attempts to enforce traditional knowledge as copyright is going to be of no consequence because you cannot get to first base. Now that is what the legal profession throughout South Africa has been saying. The comment has been made that the bill is, IP Lab, is fundamentally flawed. You are attempting to protect things in the statute which can't accommodate them. And so what we say is what you need is a new bill, a sui generis bill, where you can customize the conditions which must be met in order to obtain protection. Yesterday I mentioned the concept of everyone knows that a work of traditional knowledge comes from a particular community. Well, that is the very criterion which we have laid down in the PTK bill for the existence of protection. We don't say that a design must be novel or that it must be original. We say that you can protect it as long as everybody knows that work comes from that particular community. So that is the first main benefit of going with a sui generis statute. The other main benefit which I mentioned is that in order to understand the law as it will apply to traditional knowledge, you look at one statute, one relatively short statute, as statutes go. It's around about 40 pages. If you want to apply, if you want to rely on the existing statutes, you can't look at traditional knowledge in isolation. You've got to look at how it fits into each of those statutes. So you've got to understand the basic principles of design law. You've got to understand the basic principles of copyright law. You've got to understand the basic principles of trademark law. You can't simply deal with traditional knowledge in isolation. So that is the second major advantage of the form which has been chosen for the PT Gabriel. I am yet to see any argument as to why sui generis is not suitable. It simply has not materialized. I'm unaware of anybody who said, no, you can't do it sui generis for the following reasons. So, on the one hand, you have the approach of amending the existing statutes, which has severe problems. On the other hand, you have a sui generis bill, which nobody is suggesting can't work. And for the life of me, I actually cannot understand what the problem is. The legal profession, in fact, I'll go further and say the entire informed intellectual property community supports the sui generis approach. The sui generis approach is the international approach. So what is the problem? Why are we going out on this limb and trying to achieve the impossible? It actually escapes me. Perhaps somebody can explain to me what is the problem with sui generis legislation. My concern is that, as I said, I'm interested in the integrity of the law. My concern is that we will pass a piece of legislation, namely the IP Lab, which actually will not work. It will become a white elephant. I have said on public platforms, and I will repeat it here, that I put my professional reputation on the line and say that I predict that no successful case will ever be brought under the IP Lab. And I'm not alone in holding that view. You may get the impression that I'm some sort of madcap here who is pursuing some kind of mad obsession. I'm not a lone voice. I'm not singing solo. I'm part of a massive chorus. The whole intellectual property world is saying exactly what I'm saying. I'm just here mouthing the views of the intellectual property community. I attended a conference in Seoul in Korea right about this time last year. The conference was organized by the International Association of Intellectual Property Law. It's a very prestigious body, probably the second largest international IP organization in the world. Its membership consists of judges, academics, private practitioners, business people, you name it, everybody and anybody who is involved with intellectual property. One of the workshops at this conference dealt specifically with traditional knowledge, and I participated in that workshop. I was subjected to ridicule. People said to me, what are you people doing in South Africa? Have you lost your minds? I mean, what are you doing with this legislation? I said to them, don't shoot the messenger. I don't claim any responsibility for that legislation. In fact, I'm vehemently opposed to it. But if we go ahead with IP Lab, we are going to become the laughing stock of the international community. That is how they view our IP Lab legislation. Now, I'm a proud South African. I've held my head up high at international conferences. I don't want to be the butt of ridicule and jokes because my country is passing legislation which everybody else, and I agree with them, think is crazy.
Thank you, Professor.
Thank you,
Professor. Owen Jeffers. I think we're all well aware that your academic credentials are underpinned by several volumes and that you are traditionally wearing a cap related to having authored a volume on copyright. We're aware of that. I may just ask you to switch off your mic. People often forget to do that. So that is not what is in doubt at all, I don't think. We're going to have a short tea break, but I know that one of the issues came up, and I'm sorry that the Honourable Oriani Ambassini has gone. Were you in any of the task team meetings, Honourable Kubasa, on this bill? I can't recall. But when the chairperson was Ms. Susan de Merva.
I was serving in the subcommittee.
Because you will recall the issue came up on several occasions. In fact, we were in the Northern Cape at the time. And, pursuing an oversight visit at Kumba Mine, you will recall. And we held a meeting in a council office, which the task team did, and some of us joined it. I did as chair, where the whole issue of the sweet generous or not came up. As I tried to point out and remind members, it's not a question of is sweet generous right or wrong, and is the way this is done right or wrong. That is not the issue here. People are not saying it's crazy to go the sweet generous approach. We're not saying it's an either or issue. So, you may not be aware of that. And there were firm arguments to try and ring fence it and say, let us pursue it in this way, and others pursuing a different direction, which happened to coincide with what the DTI had requested. But it was also a position, as I keep on referring to, which our many advisors pointed out, you could go in either direction. They themselves were of that opinion. Now, let's make it clear. So it wasn't a question of sui generis is wrong, it's our Lord. Absolutely not. Let's make that clear. But as one's best here, what is the best approach to use here? And we will come back to that again. The other thing which does worry me is this issue, perhaps I haven't understood you correctly, and after tea you'll also share with us a bit more, but it did seem as if traditional knowledge where you were coming from in this bill, Honourable James, seemed to, its protection seemed to be in doubt, didn't appear to be in perpetuity. I may have got it wrong and focused on something else as this was being spelled out, whereas in the IP Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Bill, we were at pains to insist on that for this, and at pains to try and protect that. The whole issue around the materiality issue, which appears to be different, thing, it would seem, again, my understanding that what the bill here that you have tabled is saying, look, it's got to be, it focuses more towards what is in a material form, and we learn that this doesn't always have to be the case, or rather our own approach began to move in that direction. And the other issue seemed to be around, and it came up, if I'm not mistaken, by several people during the IPLAB, the issue was around the community, and it being, isn't it better for the community to have this and not all the money going to the state or whatever? And I think it was pointed out again today by the legal advisor to Parliament, Advocate van der Merwe, on page 7, the National Trust Fund for Indigenous Knowledge, and I'm looking at something called 8.9 here, clause 428D, or perhaps it's the upper one, a 6, in brown or beige, it says 9. A community may request the fund to collect and manage and distribute its income. So, I was myself heartened to learn that, this is where we were going, and perhaps where the protection of traditional knowledge may not have perhaps fully appreciated that. And I do want us to look at some of the policy issues that the legal advice to Parliament raised. rather than go off at different things. I want us to clear the decks here, because this is a serious issue that has been, and I'll ask her just as we come back after a 5 minute comfort break, just refresh our memories, Advocate van der Merwe, please, just ring fence the three issues, and then I do want us to engage on that, because to me, that's the first hurdle, you see. Let's get through that. And I want us all now to be more focused, because I have a feeling now that we are starting to focus. It could be that members are looking at the time, and it's amazing how 12 o'clock brings on the focus. But thank you very much. It's a 5 minute tea break now. Respect one another to maintain the dignity of Parliament at all times, and to respect the integrity of each other, and when we point out things, to point out them out soberly in that particular manner. So I know that we've tackled difficult issues before, and let's continue to tackle that and not get sidetracked. So I've already indicated the route I would like the committee to pursue on this matter. And I've asked you, Advocate van der Merwe, just briefly, if you will just mention those three key issues. And I want us members, please, where is it? We've got the DTI document, but we've also got, we were working with through our legal advisor, because DTI made it clear they'd be coming back again with fuller response. Is that not correct? Back again on Tuesday, wasn't it? Or not? Was that the full response last night?
So we indicated that our response, I think it will be a full response. If the committee, though, wants us to come and substance something, we could. Yes.
Okay, no, fair enough. Just so that we're all on the same track. So we're looking at this document. I hope everyone's got it. Now, we're just focusing, members, that's all. I don't want us getting sidetracked. Honourable Sartori, I'll allow you the point you wanted to make, and I insisted on running to a tea break.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to draw the attention of Professor Dean that I'm here because of rural women. And, you know, when people talk about meetings where there are professors, judges, advocates, I always ask myself how many rural women were there, because some of these bills affect us. And, you know, you can ask Honorable Ambrosine, I always raise this in justice.
It's a fair point. It's a very fair point. Advocate van der Merwe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, the issues that I see as the policy decisions that are very important to make is, the first one is whether it is competitive, or rather, is the protection of traditional knowledge uncompetitive? And just if I can just elaborate on that, that was one of the questions that one of the members posed. And the comments on competition came from the Competition Commission. And what they were saying is, I'm not sure if I don't understand what they are saying or if I totally disagree with what they are saying. Because to me it sounds like they are saying that if we protect traditional knowledge, we are stopping others from using the same item. We, by including a license to use and the fact that there is a right to refuse to give that license to use, is being uncompetitive. But the problem is that is the nature of intellectual property. And that is actually part of a much bigger debate about whether there should be any intellectual property. In fact, the Chinese view it quite differently. Because they are saying, no, we want an open market for all of this. And in fact, there is no movement in China towards protection of IP. So that is what the concern is about the competition. But So, in fact, I didn't want to tell members what I think, but I, you know, that is where I'm a bit perturbed. I don't see how we can say it's uncompetitive to protect intellectual property. That is the very nature of intellectual property, is that you are stopping others from using your copyright, your work, you know, your design, your trademark. That is the first question. And if the committee agrees that no, it is not uncompetitive, it is something that is necessary in relation to the economy, etc. Then the next question is, because that was one of the submissions, the question that was asked is, should the protection of traditional knowledge be taken out from the umbrella of intellectual property? And I think from the member introduced the bill side, as well as from the committee side, it does not seem to me that we disagree that traditional knowledge is protected under intellectual property. So it seems to me that is the answer. Yes, it must be under the umbrella of intellectual property. Well, at least at this stage. WIPO might give us another some other direction, but for now, this is where it should be. But that is a decision for the committee to take as well. And then, if it must fall under intellectual property, which form should it take? Should it take the form of a standalone bill, as is currently before this committee, or should it take the form of the IP Laws Amendment Bill, which has already proceeded from this committee and into the National Council of Provinces? So those are the issues that the committee needs to think about and answer. Because if the question is, or rather if the answer is that we need to proceed with this bill, that this bill is the desirable bill, then there are certain actions that take into place, and we will have to then act on that.
Thank you very much, Advocate Vandermova. Now, oops, yes. What I'd like now, you've heard yourself, Professor Owen Dean, you have yourself, Honourable James, the issues. Now, members on this side, of course Honourable James is a member of the committee, but as he's tabling the bill, I'm just separating him for a moment in time very artificially. But I'm going to ask you to briefly comment. Now, I allowed the first round 5 and 6 minutes. The only exception was Honourable Swanepoel, who took 3 minutes. I'd like everyone now to take 2 to 3 minutes, maximum. Honourable Salah.
Chairperson, I think the issue as we raised earlier here still remains that we have two separate bills that are talking to two different matters. The one is an amendment bill of the intellectual property, and the other one is a bill strictly focused on traditional
knowledge.
And this bill goes far beyond trade and industry. In the presentation that was given in response to what I said, it has covered science and technology, it covered Department of Arts and Culture, it covered agriculture, and it covered trade and industry. And in terms of that, it says to you that this bill is bigger than trade and industry. It refers to other areas bigger than trade and industry, and cannot be used as a way to handle this. That is the one aspect. The second aspect is, when we look at the document...
Honourable Salah, if I can just interrupt. I wanted everyone to focus on the 3 points here. Is the protection of traditional knowledge uncompetitive? You know, because the Competition Board is given as one of the submissions, you know, in terms of what the bill has tabled. The next issue, should the protection of traditional knowledge be taken out of this IPS system? And three, if so, which form stands? direction? No. If perhaps one at a time, let's look at the competitive issue that's been identified for all of it, all of us. And I think the advocate did explain here that what do we understand by this? What do we understand? And, does it fit there? So I know that you've got a thought on it because you've expressed it before. Do you want to express it immediately now again, just this particular area or one of these three?
I do not understand this competition because in my understanding, traditional leaders are not elected. They don't compete for anything. They are there, and the traditional property is there. It doesn't compete with anybody. It's unlike in a production situation where I'm producing cans, you are also producing cans, and we have the same market. So there's no competition in that particular area necessarily.
This is what we may have to focus on a little bit. But I'm going to be hearing Honourable Swanepoel ask you. Carry on, Honourable Shalal, you had another point.
What was the second one?
Should the protection of trade, traditional knowledge, be taken out of this IP, you know, system?
In that area, Chairperson, I would say there are two approaches to it. The one approach is the separate acts, the sui generis act, as it is said, which goes beyond trade and industry, can go ahead and be done elsewhere. And, but it does not suggest that where the impact of that is on other departments, they cannot include it in their own intellectual property act. Only those areas where they are affected. I think that point I've also made earlier and repeating again.
Thank you, Honourable Salah. Honourable Swanepoel.
I just wanted to know, and sorry I'm a bit ignorant, I've just come into the process, but if we go the standalone act, there's one process one clearly understands that. But I just want to know where we stand. If we decide that we want to rather put it into one piece of legislation, and have it, a comprehensive view on it, where is the bill now? Is it going to come back to this committee for us to maybe relook at the issues contained in the private members' bill to make sure that those issues are actually captured in it? That's the first point. The second point on the competitive nature of it, I don't think it's anti-competitive because it's like saying that fridges, there are different designs of fridges. There are different traditional knowledges. So the traditional knowledges can still compete against one another, and even people are free to come to the community and put different proposals on the table, and various people can get permission from the community to use that design and that. So I don't think that that is anti-competitive. And the point is that then one must say that it's anti-competitive to sell artwork. You can't protect artwork.
Thank you, Honourable Swanepoel. Honourable Waini. Three bullets. You have three questions. They are, because you weren't here when I mentioned them, that's why I'm asking. It's the protection of traditional knowledge. Is it uncompetitive? Should protection of traditional knowledge be taken out of the IP system? And if so, what form? Be standalone or what?
I think I will respond in a manner in which, in terms of taking into consideration different presentations and different perspectives, but I will not prolong my input, Honourable Chairperson, because as a number of speakers have spoken on the subject matter, both last night and today, there's been a perspective that there's a convergence in terms of number of areas. So it's going to be important to see if there are areas of convergence, what should be the best approach in terms of dealing Because if there are areas of convergence, there will be areas of divergence. How fundamental are those particular areas? Are they sticky points that you cannot align their contribution from the private members' bill? So that's a kind of a question before you talk standalone and everything. But also, how do we take into consideration the time that was spent as government, as department, and so far as an unintended consequences? Because if you talk a new standalone approach, how long will it take us as an institution, as government, and at whose detriment? So those are some of the fundamental questions. But there's something strange in terms of even the professor said he has read about 10 slides, I think in terms of the presentation, where he feels that there's a convergence in terms of those areas. But what was surprising, Prof, is your concluding remarks that number of people in the legal fraternity, both domestically and internationally, they view this IPLM as fundamentally flawed. So I can't correlate some same inputs that there's convergence, but at the end of the day, there's a view that these are fundamentally flawed. I think lastly, I would make a proposal that seeks to ensure that we must find a better way of ensuring that through the IPLP lab we incorporate certain aspects from the private members' bill than to pursue a standalone approach. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Waili, Honourable Khobasa.
Chairperson, I think that there's a subtle precedent that we are going to set if we approach this matter in the manner we do. The question can't be whether we should take out a traditional knowledge out of the IP, and if we do so, in what form then do we then proceed to protect traditional knowledge? Because I raise this question because what the answer thereto says that the bill that has gone through Parliament and has been passed by the National Assembly and has now gone through the processes of the NCOP are null and void, and that a new process must be started to withdraw that bill. That's what it means. This question leads us to that conclusion. And I'm saying we can't create that precedent and then start all over again. And then answer the question, what form? And the what form is the sui generis that is presented here before us now. So we start all over again. Does this committee have the authority to go to Parliament and say, withdraw that bill which you have passed and declare it null and void?
Stop you there, Honourable Kabas, because this keeps coming up from different members and also from, you know, people who've tabled it. And I do want you to continue after this. I'm just interrupting to make this clear. We don't have that, and I obviously would want the advocate van der Merwe to either confirm or disagree with the point I'm making here legally.
My own reading of the rules of Parliament and the Constitution is that it is now out of this committee's hands, this National Assembly. It is in the second house of Parliament who will make a decision, as I said right at the beginning, when the very first input was made by Professor Ern Dean on this matter, and a request was made in this direction, that it would be far better for him to make that request at the NCOP to people sitting there. Because that's where this bill is. And it has gone through many processes in that direction. And if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Hermans, is it not going for a debate next week? On the 30th? Yeah, next week. That it's not here. However, I cannot say if it will be passed there. Do you understand? It must complete its process there. Because the Council of Provinces is identified in an entirely different way, the members who sit there, to the members of the National Assembly. I don't know if people in this committee remember that. The appointment, whatever you want to call it, of members sitting there are not appointed in the same manner and employed. And I must make that clear, it comes from the provinces. That is why it's no longer a Senate, and it is in the Council of Provinces. However, as we all know, bills have been turned back there. And that's why there is a resolution not too sure what the actual official title is, of this committee. And it also is constitutionally there, in place. And one would be required then, should they put amendments in, etc., that bill, according to my understanding, would be returned then to the National Assembly. I hope that's now clear once and for all to every member. We don't have that authority. We don't. And so what would happen as we're sitting here? Just supposing, hypothetically, we say, and we reach a position where we say, we actually believe that this is the bill that we really need. If we were to say that, I can't preempt the committee decision at this moment. We're not even through the process. And then, what do? We can't say withdraw. We don't have that power constitutionally. We don't. Neither does the minister. Neither does the Speaker of Parliament. I must make that very clear. This bill is there in another house. And there is no Speaker of Parliament, and I'm sure we all know that. Is the Speaker of the National Assembly and a chairperson of the Council of Provinces. There's only one person who sits across both houses, and that is the Secretary of Parliament. Am I correct, Advocate? And we faced this issue before. So I don't want us sliding down that route or even exploring it, because we're exploring something that is not going to get us anywhere. Will you continue, please, Honourable Kwabasa?
Two last points, Chairperson. There is a claim that is being made that if a case was brought to a court of law on the basis of the IP laws amendment bill, it would not stand the legal test. A claim that probably also borders on saying that the whole bill is unconstitutional. And it has not been pronounced so, that the whole bill is unconstitutional and it can't pass the test if there was a court case. It's an outrageous claim. The last point, Chairperson, is that the fundamental question has been raised here by Advocate Fanon Merver, which says that there possibly are policy questions that could be attended to address a lot of challenges in the IP amendment bill. And the question I'm battling with, perhaps it might have been answered in my absence, is could that not be the approach rather than a new bill altogether? And if that was the approach, would it achieve the desired objective? Given that almost everybody here is saying both the TK and the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Bill seek to achieve the same objective. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Kavasha. Now, we've heard different points on the matter from your fellow colleagues, Honourable James, but as this is the bill you tabled, it is now your opportunity to respond if you so wish, or to ask Professor Owen Dean to.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much for the comments. Let me just say a few words and then I'm going to hand over to Professor Dean. I think that our approach in this committee to any piece of legislation is to say, is the foundation solid? And then tweak the architecture. But we have to be happy with the fact that the foundation is solid. We believe that the private members build the foundation is solid because it protects indigenous knowledge. And we believe that the IPLAB is not solid because you can't prove the newness and the originality of the work, which is the test of registering under existing laws that the IPLAB is trying to amend. That's the nub of it. Okay? In terms of the council, in terms of how you define traditional communities, those are all related important matters, but the heart of it is that the TKB protects indigenous knowledge because you don't have to prove originality or newness. Because the definition of traditional knowledge is that it's not new. You know, it's like happy birthday. Happy birthday is not new. And if happy birthday was considered to be traditional knowledge, then you cannot prove originality and newness. And that's the point that Professor Dean has been trying to make. So let me say that that my approach to this would be to say that TKB, the foundation is solid, and let's do all the things necessary as the advocate has outlined in order to make this a more sophisticated bill. And my view is that the IPLAB, the foundation is not solid, but there are aspects to that design of that bill that are very attractive. So I take the points about parliamentary procedure and how we need to make a case in the NCOP and so on entirely, and I understand the dilemma, so I thought it was quite helpful. Just by way of introduction, if Professor Dean can then talk up to the questions around competition, about traditional knowledge under IP and the choice that this committee has to make as raised by the advocate. Thank you.
Thank you. Professor Owen Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The competition point I don't think is an issue because intellectual property generally coexists with competition law. I mean, all intellectual property creates a monopoly of sorts. I mean, in copyright, for instance, you're given them a monopoly in the use of a particular song. Now, inherently, that's anti-competitive. But the two systems coexist, competition law and IP law. And the way they coexist is to say, and this is not my view, it's, I'm just explaining the way it's crystallized in the law, is to say, intellectual property law per se doesn't offend against competition principles. If you use your rights in such a manner as to defeat the objects of competition law, then it can become a problem. And the
bottom line is that competition law trumps intellectual property law. So if an intellectual property owner is abusing his position, competition law will step in and say, no, 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 you can't do that, you've got to grant licenses or whatever. That's why I say it's not an issue, because it's common cause that whichever approach, whichever bill is preferred, it is going to be part of intellectual property law. And so it's going to sink or swim with the rest of intellectual property law. And there is a coexistence between competition law and intellectual property law. The second point is that clearly traditional knowledge is a form of IP. I mean, both bills recognize that. And it has the basic elements of intellectual property. So there's absolutely no point whatsoever in going outside intellectual property to find some form of protection. And I don't think anybody's arguing that. I'm not aware of anybody contending that, no, 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 you mustn't protect traditional knowledge as intellectual property. You must deal with it somewhere else. And I'm not even sure where that somewhere else would be. So I don't think that's an issue either, certainly not as between these two bills. And then we come back to the question of form. Well, I mean, you know, you've heard what I have to say, and I'm not going to repeat it. So that's on those issues. A couple of questions were raised. The issue of convergence, I said the first 10 slides of the DTI's presentation, I could have written myself in support of the PTK bill. Those 10 slides deal with the objectives and the policy issues and the broad approach. And there the two bills do not really differ. There is convergence between the two. Forgive me for saying, when I drafted my first draft of this bill, I actually set out to make it as close as possible to IP Lab. I identified certain problems in IP Lab, and I tried to address those problems, but I didn't seek to interfere or sort of depart from the main emphasis of the bill, and that of the IP Lab bill, and that accounts for why there is such a large measure of convergence between the two. The question of policy, which Advocate Van der Merwe has raised, I think it depends what you mean by policy. I had a brief discussion with her in the tea adjournment, just to see whether we were on the same wavelength as to what we're talking about when we say policy. And with all due respect to her, I would see it more as detail than policy. She sees the detail as being policy, and by that I mean both bills have a national trust fund, both bills have a council, and so forth. The precise manner of operation of these councils may have, or these institutions may have some differences, but I see that as a question of detail which can be changed. I mean, if it is felt when the PT cable is examined that the council doesn't operate in a way which is desirable, well, we simply change it, change the mechanisms. I mean, that's detail. That doesn't go to the heart of the bill. And that's what I consider to be policy. The point was made that I say that the IP Lab is unworkable, that no successful case will ever be brought. And I stand by that statement. But it's not a constitutional issue. The Constitution doesn't enter into the picture at all. I'm saying that no successful case will ever be brought because the IP Lab or the works can't meet the basic requirements, originality and novelty. If you bring a design case before the court, the first question the court is going to say is, show me whether this design is novel. Show me what the term used in the law is. Show me the prior art. Let me see what was in existence before you arrived at this design so that we can see whether it's new. Now, how are you ever going to do that with traditional knowledge? And it's on that basis that I say no successful case is ever going to be brought because nobody's ever going to be able to prove that
that a traditional design is novel. It has nothing to do with the constitutions, not a constitutional issue at all. The question was also raised about the rights being perpetual in some respects in IP Lab and not so in PTK. This is, the rights being in perpetuity is one of the main criticisms of why you cannot treat you cannot amend the existing statutes, because all of those statutes are based on a philosophy. Namely, the creative person makes a new work, the state gives him a monopoly to exploit that work for a certain period, on condition that at the end of that period the work falls into the public domain. That's the underlying philosophy of intellectual property. Certainly the Copyright Act, the Designs Act, and the Patents Act. Now you come with a perpetual right. It's actually foreign to that whole approach. It's inconsistent with the whole approach of those acts. It's one of the reasons why I've said you're trying to drive a square peg into a round hole. But in fact, we do, the PTK Bill does in fact make provision for perpetual protection in the case of an unpublished work. Advocate Fundamera drew attention to that. Published means you issue copies to the public. So for as long as in traditional knowledge, property is not commercially exploited, it is protected perpetually. It's only when you bring it out into the marketplace that a period comes into play, and it's a long period. It's 50 years for the traditional knowledge work. So if you want traditional knowledge to be intellectual property, which we all agree it should be, you've got to play by the basic rules of intellectual property. And the basic rules of intellectual property do not really allow for perpetual protection. I could go on for a long time, but I think that's all I want to say at this stage.
No, thank you very much, Professor Owen Dean. Couple of points there. I just, I'm the one here that tries to keep a record of what is going on so that one can guide the committee. Now, you spoke about, and I wanted to be clear, it's the input from DTI you were referring to in terms of the 10 pages of convergence. Now, because my slides are one per page and yours are two per page, I've also removed the first two pages, or three, and I started with background as being the so-called first page, the so-called. Am I right there? That's where the convergence, you say, starts. From there, where it says background.
That goes beyond that. The convergence continues right through to...
Where does it start from?
From the beginning. The very first slide until the tenth slide, I say...
No, it's not the first slide per se. My first slide says input from DTI.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, that's not what you're agreeing with, or the delegation... or the third
page. I don't disagree with it.
So I'm saying you start from background.
Well, purpose. Yeah. The prior slide is purpose.
Oh, purpose. Right.
So I say purpose, background.
Mm-hmm. Background again.
Background a third time, background a fourth time. Objectives of protecting IK using the IP system. Proposed measures. They are all, as I say, I could have written them myself to justify the PTK bill. Where we part company is from the bill's, the slides headed private members bill.
Right, thank you very much. So that's not really the nine pages per se. It would be the first eight pages for members. You see, we'll just get that right because not everyone who sits on the committee is here with us today. Now, it's been clearly spelled out where the convergence lies in terms of this presentation. The second issue one would just want quick clarity on, and that is the point about 50 years
traditional knowledge, if it does come out into this place, you know, it's still got this 50 years, not perpetuity. So as I understand it, at no point in time, and I want to get this clear in my head, the concept of perpetuity in terms of protection in the Protection of Traditional Knowledge Bill is not accepted. I just want to get that clarity here, because that was one of the huge, you know, issues that we faced under the IPLAB.
Well, my understanding is that the IPLAB does actually grant protection in perpetuity in certain circumstances. But it does that in statutes which don't give perpetual protection generally. So it's making an exception to the general rule which applies to copyright designs, blah blah blah. Now, one of the merits of dealing with this issue in a sui generis statute is that you can make your own rules. I mean, the bill as it presently reads says 50 years once you've put the product in the marketplace. If you don't like that, you can change it to 100 years or 200 years or perpetuity. I mean, that is the suggested period. But Parliament can make its own rules. And that is, one of the merits of having a sui generis bill, that you can make your own rules. You're not bound by what else is contained in the statute, as you would be when you're amending the Copyright Act and so forth.
Okay, thank you for that clarification, because it is an issue that we tackled under the IPLAB, and we were, as a committee, reassured that this would be ring-fenced towards us as being in perpetuity, that particular aspect. But we'll look at that again for our own benefit. Members, there is a lot more that we do need to engage on, and I think all of us want to refresh our memories on certain aspects. But it is 12:45 now, and the time that we require now to deal with these issues is going to actually take another 3 hours. And I am concerned about that. I also know that the department has indicated, look, here and there, it may come back on certain issues at the committee's request, as it were, after we've engaged on these matters. That is still the position, is it not, DDG? Or do you want to make any further comments now?
Chair, there were questions that were supposed to be answering today. We would appreciate if the committee gives us an opportunity to say whatever we need to say today, because we believe that we would have addressed all issues, only if the committee finds that there's some exceptions that we still need to come back for. Thanks.
Honourable James?
Thank you, Chair. There are also some questions that I have for the GTI. I can send it to them by email to you, and to give them opportunity, in fact, answer those questions. It would be a very good idea if they came back to the committee, in fact. But that's, of course, your call. So
it'll come by myself. We want to make it a committee document. Is that not the idea? Yes. So it'll come to me through Mr. Hermans, the committee secretary. And Mr. Hermans make that available to all members of this committee, including the Honourable Sheila Satorni as well. And I don't know if you've got the email address. Okay. Everyone there on board. And it's at this point, I'm glad that we will be concluding this session of the meeting on what can only be called a constructive note. As we're back to basics of the way we operate in Parliament, I think we will all then be able to appreciate the different points of view that have been tabled here this morning, both in writing as well as expressed. And I want to thank you, Honourable James, for being here with your team. That is the Professor Owen Dean and also Karen. The DTI have already explained that wouldn't they like to come back
in writing. Isn't that what was said? Or do you want to comment now? You want to comment now? Right, go ahead.
No, thanks, Chair and Honourable Members. Yesterday, there was the issue of biopiracy that was raised.
Oh.
Yes. We admit to say maybe we were talking too many issues on this issue, giving examples of misappropriation or stealing. We're using stealing, misappropriation, biopiracy, because examples were running transversely. We're talking about the Patents Act that has been amended in 2005 that incorporates genetic resources that can be stolen. We give an example of Pelagonia in Alice, next to Fort Ahem, where sheep stole and patented it in Switzerland, Geneva, and the question came back to say this genetic resources was not revealed, disclosed as a requirement. And then it is true that it was found to be a South African genetic resource. So we use biopiracy in that context. And then somehow we might have extended it to non-so-called scientific issues, our apology, but we're indicating that people are saying. So
the context and also the apology. I think it's understood in that particular light as an example that is transversely given. Thank you.
Thanks. So the issue maybe of the philosophy that Advocate van der Merwe raised, to say we have two philosophies, two ideologies on this page. That is our understanding. And then if we cannot reconcile the two philosophies or ideologies, then it will be, Tower Peace in Italy. Yeah, that one, that is. That
one.
I said Tower Pisa in Italy.
Oh,
yes. Yes,
Tower of Pisa, yes. Is it still standing?
Yes. So scientifically they came with mathematical things, but the issue remains to say if the foundation is wrong, then we may end up inclining to the ground. Yeah, that can be. So all in all we are saying we are amending the intellectual property, not to have a standard alone, to have one in all those four legislation, that is trademarks and the like, copyright. So please, when we try to answer this question to say where to go, let's go back to the issue of the philosophy of amending it within the intellectual property. Because if it stands outside and it does not interface, agree that the issue of national council is interfacing, but there are issues that need to be packed in the foundation. That's all what we're saying. And then the issue of perpetuity, I think we argued very seriously on the, now it's called what, IP, EPLAP, something of that sort, yeah, Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Bill. We argued on perpetual. We gave an example of trademarks to say you can renew 10 years. So 10 years is not perpetual. 200 years is not perpetual. If you forget to renew, you will see that it is not perpetual. But we say, why can't we use the law of trademark by extension to allow those things to go on and on? And then we are saying, raw as it is, traditional knowledge or indigenous knowledge, raw as it is, it must be pegged on one side, and nobody should say, this is my intellectual property, say design is 10 years or 15 years, copyright is 50 years plus, life of a person plus 50 years. Then I know, true as they are, they have a ritual. But the moment you start to borrow something for contemporary work and everything, it should be the life, it should be the Designs Act, it should be the Trademarks Act, Copyrights Act. That is the philosophy behind it. And then, so generally we wanted to give that clarity, to say the philosophy must be right, the ideology must be right, otherwise what I call pizza, corrected or not corrected, but we learned that it was folly. So generally I think we can leave. And then before I conclude, maybe we have forgotten, we have articles here that...
Yes.
I'm
just checking, because we do have a bank, you know, Mr. Herman's. Are these new ones?
They are sort of new ones. There is Dutchfield. Yeah, I want to read them for the record. Yeah, to say, yesterday we talked about the issue of perspective. To say, if I've got a perspective, today, if I'm wrong, I must live with it. Day after tomorrow, somebody may come into power and say, McDonald, you were right. And then that person can change the whole, what's called philosophy of doing things, to say, McDonald, even if you were in the minority 2 years ago, now I'm saying you are right. That's how life goes on. So I'm saying, we know sui generis. So I'm going to read the articles, the names of the articles, authors, of people who agree that you can use intellectual property as it is to protect traditional knowledge or indigenous knowledge of folklore as I defined yesterday. This is Oliver Rakuno. That is the workshop that you, yes, yeah, Rakuno, and I think it will be distributed. And this comes from the, what is it, International Center for Trade and Sustainable Development, ICTSD, is written by Ahmed Abdel Latif of Egypt. And then I'm coming to another one of Intellectual Property Watch. Yes. And then we have the Global... Sorry, I'm so excited. Okay. It's IP Law, Intellectual Property Law and Policy Research Unit. Is it the University of Cape Town? Yes. It's Johan von Braun, PhD. Yes. Okay. And then, it's not a lot, but it's to prove a point that there are perspectives. Yeah, there is that field of Australia. And then there is also the one of Argentina, I think. Yeah. Graham Dutchfield, Herschel Smith, Senior Research Fellow, Queen Mary University of London. It will be given...
When was that one written there? When was it written? Because we have one of them, but I don't know if that's the same one. We do have one for the workshop, so I'm not sure if that's the same one.
Okay. They confirm that it's one of the workshops. Okay. Yes. But, and there is also Malkungo of UCT. That's the last one.
That's new.
The new one. Yeah, the new one. Yes. From the UCT University, who analyzed even the IP policy dealing with traditional knowledge to say it can be done. It's a parliamentary or departmental policy. So what we are saying is that when we can approach a parliament, we came with that perspective. And then for us, to answer Advocate Van der Merwe, it's a moot point that we thought it is now chosen to say we are going to that direction of amending the intellectual property laws and then go on. So that's all what we wanted to say. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chief Director, DDG.
Chair, thank you very much again, and we appreciate this opportunity because we're hoping that it will be only today that we have to talk about this issue. But we will, assist the committee where they would want us to come back. We do feel strongly that there are no new issues. We do feel strongly that all of the issues that Professor Dean has raised against why we should not amend the intellectual property laws to protect IK, those things were raised in this committee before the bill was redrafted. As the bill was being redrafted, those issues were taken into account. It is for that reason that the issues around the state involvement were revised, were reorganized to take into account some of the submissions that were made by stakeholders, and it is for that reason that some areas were tweaked to take into account exactly those challenges that he's speaking about. So this debate took place. There is nothing new today that comes that was not addressed. But Chair, I just also want to say that you'll notice that in all our engagements when we're in Parliament, our approach to each and every stakeholder input to the department is we take that with respect. We do engage stakeholders, all of them, equally with respect. And we know that in some instances, because we have not agreed with a particular view of a particular stakeholder, that could be, a bit bad for them. But it doesn't make our work bad. And so, we do appreciate that you can criticize the merit of something, but to say something we are doing bad work, I think there should be some credit that is given to the department, but also this committee, because it does suggest at some point that we mislead this committee and this committee is blind. It takes what the department says blindly and therefore passes it. This committee didn't do that. We came with a proposal and that was taken by the committee and the committee redrafted and required experts. And Chair, you'll recall when we were talking about the number of experts that came here, you indicated that, yes, we've heard all the experts, but we want to hear the inputs. and I think that's still relevant even today, Chair. We want to make it clear that our position is that it is untrue that the IP bill that has been processed through this Parliament is fundamentally flawed. We don't agree with that. And we do not agree that there's overwhelming support for this bill and there was no overwhelming support for that bill. I think for us, we don't determine the need for the proposals that we put on the table according to the number of people that say yes or that say no. We look at the submissions. You can have one person saying the same thing but putting them under different caps. And if you count that, it doesn't necessarily add value to that. It's just one point. But that point, we've considered it. So, Chair, for us, it's not about the quantity. It was about the value of the input that we got. This committee said we received input not only from the people that speak in the interest of the industry, but also people that speak in the interest of the people that are affected by the theft that is taking place on an ongoing basis. So we had balanced views, and we were able to say to the committee, this is how we can contribute to also the redrafting process to make sure that we rectify whatever concerns that may have existed in the bill. And if any person takes this bill right now and reads it, they will see that it's fundamentally different from the copy that was submitted to this committee. And Chair, we appreciate that process. But Chair, I also want to say that we spoke about the issue of competition. For record, I just want to indicate that the competition policy is the policy that was drafted by our department. In drafting our laws, we always make sure that we also align the laws that are related. So there's no question about the issue of competition. In fact, if anybody comes and says that the competition policy is opposing our IP policy, that will be unthinkable. We would object to that. So there is no competition issue about that. Our competition law recognizes IP. If you look at Section 10 of the Competition Act, it does even provide for an exemption process where the exercise of intellectual property might be detrimental to competition. So that alignment is very clear. There's no question. There's a clear interface. Our policies are linked. If you go to our policies, you go to competition, you go to consumer, you go to companies, you'll see the linkages. That is one thing that we pay attention to, and we do believe that also on this issue, there's no issue about competition. It might have been just the view of a person, but we don't believe that it makes any difference to how we should approach this. McDonald has covered this point about the policy issue, the policy question. We didn't think that they feel that policy question right now. As you say, it's the midpoint. When we came with that proposal of the IP bill, it was informed by a policy that has already been adopted that the right approach is the one to amend the intellectual property laws. Chair, I want to point out that if you look at the document that Advocate Falameva was taking the committee through today, it clearly shows you the differences and also the similarities. There is overwhelming similarities. And therefore, it shows to you that perhaps what should have happened is that certain inputs should have been made in the process of that bill to tweak the areas where people still felt that there are gaps. But we were convinced after that process that there were no gaps. But to the extent that there are gaps, I think there is no problem raising those issues as gaps. But what is clearing in this is that even in this bill that is being proposed, this protection of traditional knowledge bill, even in that bill, there's still reference to the very same pieces of legislation that we think, no, they are there, we should not interfere with. So as much as you're going to have that one bill that is, if it's passed into law, it's going to be standalone, but it's actually not standalone because you can't read it without reference to those other ones. So you still have to carry those two copies. I'm just, you know, trying to illustrate what the Prof said yesterday, that you have this big one that people must try and learn this. What I'm saying is that there's absolutely no way that you can have only this one without that big one. You always have to cross-reference. That is how the bill is drafted. So in any event, you cannot separate these issues. So what we're saying is that instead of adding another one, let's integrate it here. That is the policy that was adopted. Let's integrate, and we're saying integration is good. So, Chair, on our side, we think that we've exhausted all of the issues. We think that this committee has all the information in front of it, and we do think that it is untrue that this is unworkable. We've been told that before. In fact, there's always been a buzzword. Every process that is happening in Parliament is said to be unconstitutional, or it's unworkable, it's impractical. We do think that there are people that are saying this is workable, and there's perhaps more people. The fact that they do not necessarily utilize the media to make that voice does not mean that it doesn't. But if the committee goes back to the stakeholders that came here to this committee, you will see that long list. But if you go into the list of the stakeholders that came for this particular bill and look at what size that is, and look at whether there are any people that are actually affected by this process, which have said something in that bill. No one. So we're saying that let's take all the interest. The fundamental point is to protect the IK from being exploited using the intellectual property system. And you can only do that if you integrate it into that system appropriately so, because it is there. It was just not expressed. And we're saying let's express it. So, Chair, I think on our side of the department, we again say we appreciate the opportunity. And just in closing, Chair, I just want to give an example of a system that I think if we take this approach, we we are just going to go to. If you look at the our laws in relation to civil marriages and customary marriages, I think I made this point at some point, that you have a separate system for customary marriages, and then you've got another system for civil marriages. And at all times, these systems, they are at odds. Because you decide to make another law that's there. Somebody else take another route and use this other law. I get married to McDonald in a customary marriage, and I can use a loophole and go and marry somebody in a civil marriage and go to the home affairs and sign without McDonald's knowing, because also there's no linkage, because the laws are there, they're separate systems. That leads to abuse. This is exactly what's going to happen. There's some IK protection bill that is sitting somewhere, or the law there. Somebody's going to use that. Somebody's going to be using continuously the IP system to abuse exactly that. So you're just creating that gap again for abuse. So we're not helping. That thing around customary marriages and civil marriages continues today, because customary marriages are not recognized. They are recognized in law, but for you to get that right, you still have to go and register it again at home affairs. If you haven't registered it, you see it every day, certificates of people when they die. It comes never married. We cannot continue to perpetuate something like that. That disregards the dignity of the people that should be benefiting. I think people have got the right to self-determination. And again, we think that if there are things that people feel that the IP system, as amended now to protect IK, will still leave gaps, then another three generous legislation on IK can come and deal with all those issues on the side. It can be from a human rights perspective, it can be from a cultural perspective, it can be from whatever perspective, but intellectual property is the domain of the Department of Trade and Industry, and we believe that we must amend it to deal with these issues. Thank you very much.
Very much, DDG, Ms. Odwin Tooley, Consumer and Corporate Regulatory Division, which of course includes all of the areas that you mentioned. But just on the final point here, and then we'll just adjourn the meeting, a point why we've invited and encouraged the Honourable Satori to be here, because she, even though she's a Member of Parliament, does represent to some degree one of the imputs around here. I think imputs are very, very important. They have the actual experiential understanding of things. So we did take them into account, and we continue to do so. But I also believe that as we walk along this journey, because I think one thing is acknowledged there, you know, and I'm taking the positives out of today's meeting, something Advocate van der Merwe mentioned, and indeed has been acknowledged both by members sitting here as well as a member there, his advisors, and I think DTI as well. If there is convergence on a number of issues, the difference of view is that, well, if there is so much convergence, why are we now wanting to take a different approach now and not wait for something to become a piece of legislation and then deal with some outstanding matters? One thing we must be clear about, every law enacted in every country, whenever they have passed it, is not foolproof. There is no foolproof law that has ever been enacted. There isn't one. So all we can do as legislators is to try to produce the best bill we can. That's all we try to do. And that is why private members' bills have been brought in. Because you cannot throw out the possibility always that the private member may not add to that and may not contribute. Now, we're not in a position to make a decision here. We're not considering the bill. I think we need to make that clear. We are still in the deliberation stage, and that is where issues are coming in. But the reason why I'm not going to allow people to speak now, I wanted to close the meeting at 1, but I do want to thank, I've thanked yourself, Honourable James, I've thanked Professor Owen Dean. I didn't thank Ms. Karen Bosman for being here with us this morning, and certainly everyone who is here. I think that we've learned from today, if we're going to go anywhere with this, we've got to work together in a more, I say, in an atmosphere that enables everyone to contribute. Can we please do that at our next meeting? We always have done that. So let's continue to proceed in that manner. And Mr. Nietzsche Tenzi, I want you to make sure with our committee secretary, Mr. Hermans, that indeed we have all these documents. And I've got to issue them as well to everyone sitting in this room, not just the members of this committee. You know, I want to make that clear, and the sooner we can do that, the better. Thank you, everyone. The meeting is adjourned until Tuesday at 10 o'clock, to be confirmed again. All right. Yes, well, look, we haven't got time for all of those TPCs. Thank you. Have a good weekend.